Guys, we have 68 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 69. Stay tuned for Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and your weather in the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Tuesday morning at 9 on the wake-up call, it's our pleasure to bring you author, activist, doctor of economics, and defense analyst Daniel Ellsberg. He was the guy with enough guts to copy the Pentagon report on how decisions were being made in Vietnam and then leak them to the Washington Post and other media because he felt the war was wrong. That report later became known as the Pentagon Papers. Now, his latest book, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, draws some interesting correlations between Vietnam and Iraq, like both being started on a lie. Don't miss author Daniel Ellsberg, Tuesday morning at 9 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell my brother, tell my sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell my brother, tell my sister.
To use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother. Talk to me, sister.
Truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man: tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax, and my toll-free long-distance number is 920 WGNU. That's 1-877-920 WGNU. Any kind of, every kind of, all kinds of ways. Get up. Get to me. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about. In the next hour, we are really blessed. We're going to have an amazing guest in the next hour, and then an amazing guest in the hour after that. We're going to have South African labor leader Lebone Mambasa. Will be joining us. He ran for the presidency of South Africa. You're going to hear some stuff about South Africa that you didn't know. We're going to talk about what true labor is. We had labor on yesterday to talk about the Walmart campaign, the anti-Walmart campaign. We're going to talk about another type of labor. And a focus on black Africans. It's a big deal. We're going to have South African labor leader Lebone Mambasa on the show. Then in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to have Daniel Ellsberg. This morning is all about we're getting to the truth of the matter. And don't forget, we are going to have a guest in the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to be talking about the medical industry. Daniel Ellsberg's going to be in the 9 o'clock hour. 8 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking about the medical industry. So we have much, much, much to talk about. Much, 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 much to talk about. Yes, indeedy, dandy, we do. Daniel Ellsberg. On the wake-up call, Lebone Mambasa on the wake-up call. Much to talk about. One thing about the world that we live in right now, given all of the things that are happening, all of the bad stuff that's happening out there, deaths, murders, cold-heartedness, greed, astonishing, breathtaking greed. I mean, we're talking about clinical greed. We're talking about a greed that is unimaginable to decent human beings. So in a world defined or confined by those parameters that exist right now, one would have to say that little could happen that would send chills down our collective spines. Well, don't you think? Gas prices, $3 a gallon, doggone near. We have people dying, babies dying left and right. George W. Bush saying that he needs to get on with his life. He's talked about Cindy Sheehan and he needs to get on with his life. Get past the death. I guess he's saying get past the death of her baby and move on to other things. This, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this is just mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling. A man, and it comes as no surprise when we're talking about people in the media. We're not talking about people that have a whole lot of face time on television. Talking about people that have a whole lot of access into a whole lot of Americans' homes via the television. It is since we're talking about those circumstances, it is not surprising that the man turns out to be a white man. Okay. There's no sin in that. But it is fascinating for the discussion that we're getting ready to engage in. A white man who calls himself a preacher, hallelujah, praise the Lord, thank you, Jesus. He is a preacher. He is a pastor. No. He would call himself a preacher. Said out his mouth I truly, honest to goodness, I swear to God, I do not understand this. Pat Robertson said out his mouth during a sermon. Hallelujah, praise the Lord. He said during a sermon that it would be better for this country to assassinate Hugo Chavez. Ain't that some stuff? What kind of God do you worship at the feet of that would say to you to come out of your mouth, yeah, kill him, because we don't like his political policies. Now, mind you, there are, and let me be clear on this. It is an abomination against God. It is, let me see, what's that called? What is that thing called? It's ten something. What is it? Ten. Oh, yeah, Ten Commandments. There's a little thing in the Ten Commandments that says, what is it? Thou shalt them, because there are a whole lot of thou shalt nots. But one that comes racing to my mind is, thou shalt not kill. We have a pastor, a preacher, a multi-million dollar preacher on television in front of God and everybody, advocating for the murder, for the killing of another human being. And mind you, it wasn't the dude that advocated apartheid. It wasn't him. It wasn't the dude that advocated experimentation on children based upon their color. It wasn't a dude that kept people in poverty. It wasn't a dude that put bombs at the Olympics and bombs at clinics. It's the dude that's the president of another country that has some oil that the United States wants. Now, mind you, it is no coinky dink. It's not just happened. Chance, know the world that you're living in. Donald Rumsfeld has been all over South America this weekend. He didn't say put a bullet in Hugo. He couldn't say that in front of the cameras. So he gets his lap dogs to do that for him. Mind you, Donald Rumsfeld is going all over this country this weekend, hollering about Hugo Chavez, ratcheting it up. In fact, he's been talking such tough smack that Arlen Specter pulled him in and said, baby, you need to get back up off of this. How are we supposed to be able to negotiate with the passage of CAF to other South American countries when you're out here talking smack about a democratically elected, a man who received more votes than George W. Bush could dream of or pay for? His people truly love him. And if there wasn't for the millions of dollars running into Venezuela from America, Hugo Chavez would have no opposition. There wouldn't be people talking bad about Hugo Chavez, but for the $1 million worth of propaganda that is going into that country from us. So Donald Rumsfeld is walking around South America, Central America, talking smack about Hugo Chavez. He gets pulled in by Republican leaders saying, you know what, chill. And as soon as the Republican folks say, chill up off of Hugo, we have Pat Robertson saying, get him. And the only American paper that is talking about this is the Chicago Tribune. And you want to know why? Because Hugo Chavez is opposed to CAFTA. And he's trying to get the other Central American countries to say no to CAFTA. Four five four oh 400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. Also, members of the Energy Summit of Governments in the Caribbean region, all except for Trinidad, Togo, and Barbados, supported Hugo's suggestions to set up the United States Independent Petrocarib. Okay, they're setting up entities outside of the United States. Oh yeah, there's going to be a ratcheting up. This is what Pat Robertson said. He said, if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we ought to go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot cheaper than a war. It's a whole lot cheaper than the war. It's, you know, colonialism. It takes a whole lot to kill that dog. Vampires have nothing over colonialism. Because at least vampires were at least one time dead. The colonialism is the never died. At least a vampire died at one point and came back to life. Colonialism has never died. And it is a colonialistic mentality. It is that mentality that says, I get to have your stuff. I get to decide how you think. I get to decide what you have. I get to decide what you say. I decide over you, you. I rule, you don't. All because of the color of your skin. Colonialism 101. Never died. It's a mentality of wicked entitlement. It is a legacy of unearned privilege. So when you read the words, when you listen to the words of Pat Robertson, it's the legacy of an entity, a position, a worldview that has never died. Pat Robertson wants Hugo Chavez killed dead, assassinated killed, murdered dead. He doesn't want him to die of a natural death. He wants him murdered dead because Venezuela, which is not the United States, never has been, never will be. Venezuela has oil that the United States is dependent upon. Therefore, that colonialistic mentality says, I got that. That's my stuff. You can't tell me no to that. You can't set the terms of my stuff. Huh? Colonialistic mentality that is unlike Dracula ever dreamed of being. It ain't never died. But yet it lives forever. Or it ain't dead yet. Let me put it that way. It ain't dead yet. And it has lived ceaselessly. It's lived successfully for hundreds of years. We're going to be talking about colonialism with our next guest in the 7 o'clock hour, South African labor leader. I'm South America is in my mind. South African labor leader, Lebone Mambasa, will be here. Oh, he ran for president. For South Africa. He don't call us South Africa. We're going to be talking about that. Oh, we have much to talk. Pat Robertson said kill. No. Pat Robertson said murder him. Murder him. Cool with me. And a preacher and a man of God said, yeah, shoot. Assassinate him. Assassinate him. Can you hear it? Can you hear it? Can you just hear it? If you close your eyes and be still for a moment, if you are a follower of the Bible, if you believe in the Bible, if you believe in the words of the Bible, can you just hear the words of the Bible after the end of that broadcast from Pat Robertson, where he said, "Yeah, I'm down with the assassinate." Hugo Chavez, you know what the words of the Bible that just came floating out? And Jesus wept. We're taking a break. I'm Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. You need to stay with me. We ain't done here. We ain't done here.
This is a message to all those who've been trying to reach the top of the hill on that ladder of success.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. The I-70 express lanes are now open for eastbound traffic after overnight maintenance work. Westbound 70 at the press section, that accident has been cleared, but you may see a brief delay. Eastbound 370 on 94 exit ramp. Motorist assist is with a flat and is blocking the right turn lane. Westbound 70 at Adelaide, there's an accident reported. Eastbound 70 at the Blanchette Bridge, road construction. Right lane is closed as crews are in the final stages. There are no delays in this hour. Eastbound 44 between Bowles and Lindbergh, no problems to report this hour. Eastbound 40 between Chesterfield Parkway and McKnight, look for everything to be on the move. Northbound 270 at 44 and Marshall is already stop and go. Westbound 270 between Old Halls Ferry and New Florissant Road, nothing to report this hour. Eastbound 70 between T.R. Hughes and 79, look for traffic to be building there. Westbound 55-70 split from Exchange onto the PSB, no problems yet. Westbound 64 at the 55-70 split, everything's on the move. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank on the Laclede's Landing, everything looks good. And northbound Route 3 on the approach of the PSB, everything is moving well this hour. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, trust those who know your vehicle best. Through September, see your local Toyota dealer to schedule your complimentary tire rotation with the purchase of any regularly priced oil change. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly cloudy skies today, high in around 80. This evening clear with a low in the lower 60s. For Wednesday, mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s. Wednesday evening, mostly clear with a low in the mid-60s. And Thursday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, under cloudy conditions, we have 68 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 69 and clouds as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Science or religion, Republican or Democrat, politics, education, crime, or you just want to talk about Girl Scout cookies. What's your opinion? What's your solution? Tell me, Dave Linehan on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6.
I have three children, and I've been raising my 16-year-old sister.
Mary Gallagher and her family shared a two-bedroom apartment with eight people. Now Habitat for Humanity is helping her build a simple, decent, affordable home of her own.
When we first found out that we were getting a Habitat home, it was like a dream. I kept saying, "Don't anybody wake me up."
Not only is Mary helping build her own home, she'll buy it with a no-profit, zero-interest mortgage to keep it affordable.
Habitat came out and built my home, and when Mary started building her house, I wanted to come out and give a hand.
We're not just building Mary's house, we're building a neighborhood.
There's several more to be built this year, and I look forward to working on each of their houses and seeing the joy of their face when they open the door to their brighter future.
Habitat for Humanity. Building homes, changing lives. Support the work in your community. Visit habitat.org.
I feel very blessed. God has answered all of my prayers. We are home.
Friday morning on the Wake Up Call, reporter Liam Schiff and former researcher Dr. Jonathan Fishbein investigate the AIDS drug experiments done on orphans in New York and Africa. Was it right to use these children as guinea pigs just because their parent, the state, said it was okay? Tune in to find out what's really behind these impenetrable doors of politically guided research. Friday morning at 7 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
AM 920 WGNU is the home of Radio Free St. Louis. If you're outside the metropolitan area, pick us up at WGNU.net.
Tuesday morning at 9 on the Wake Up Call, it's our pleasure to bring you author, activist, doctor of economics, and defense analyst Daniel Ellsberg. He was the guy with enough guts to copy the Pentagon report on how decisions were being made in Vietnam and then leak them to the Washington Post and other media because he felt the war was wrong. That report later became known as the Pentagon Papers. Now, his latest book, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, draws some interesting correlations between Vietnam and Iraq, like both being started on a lie. Don't miss author Daniel Ellsberg, Tuesday morning at 9 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
What you messing with? This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax, and my toll free long distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-9468. My website is LizBrown.com. 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 That's right. And my email is revolution@LizBrown.com. That's revolution@LizBrown.com. My show is archived daily on WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can also podcast my show. How cool is that? Get to WhiteRoseSociety.org. And as always, 24 hours a day from Xenia to Zimbabwe. The Wake Up Call is broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Those are my digits. Handle your business. Handle your business. You're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
Steve, good morning.
How you doing today?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
Pretty good. Well, I'll tell you what, I have to criticize you as being that unbalanced liberal left. Because on this, you failed to tell the other side. I caught this story myself about 4:30 this morning. I plugged my phone in and made sure I had enough charge on it. You know, the reasons he's giving why he wants this guy assassinated is the threat he's going to spread communism throughout South America.
Mm-hmm.
And for the other bugaboo, he's going to spread Islamic fundamentalism throughout that part of the world. Now, can you imagine, that is, when I think of Catholicism, I think of South America. I don't see how you're going to convert these people into fundamental, you know, this guy ran for president once before. He tried to use the pulpit to run for the White House. I think it was back in the late 80s.
Pat Robertson.
You know, and I think this guy is probably going to try to set himself up again. Because he's looking at this Republican field and seeing there's nothing there.
What would happen if a person, a minister, a pastor, a bishop, a archbishop, someone in Zimbabwe or someone in Haiti or someone in Venezuela, a religious figure called for the assassination of George W. Bush. What do you think, how do you think the world would lose their mind?
Well, you know, George Bush has kind of got a reward out for the head of bin Laden, and they're planning on sending it back on dry ice.
But I might, we don't have to go to bin Laden. We're talking about a democratically elected, you know, Hugo Chavez has something over George W. Bush. He has been democratically elected twice.
By a free people.
By huge, huge, huge margins, and most of the people voted in that country.
Well, you know, it's funny how all paths lead back to the Iran-Contra affair. You know, mm-hmm. going back to Daniel Noriega and the Sandinistas down there in Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people, I could see Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, president and vice president. I mean, I wonder if these Republican supporters of this administration would swing for these guys.
Steve, bring that idea back on Halloween, okay?
Yeah.
Talk to
Thanks
you later. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Yeah. When I went to Israel, I walked in the West Bank, and I went in a Palestinian store, a little grocery store. And one thing that I did not do, I didn't steal a Coke bottle and take out a gun and shoot the storekeeper and say, hey, my people were here 2,000 years ago, so I have a right to this Coke bottle.
Mm.
And that's basically what the Jews did, the Jewish terrorists, so the Stern Gang and the Irgun, when they massacred the Palestinians at Deir Yassin and drove a majority of them out of their land.
It's all about land. I mean, there's so much of the decisions in the world that are made are about land. The people, the Zimbabwean people were driven off of their land. The South African, the black South Africans driven off of their land by people who claim ownership to it. And what I am fascinated by when we hear the stories of what's happening in Gaza right now is that nobody is tripping off the fact of the houses that the Jewish folks that are leaving behind are going to be destroyed so that Palestinian people cannot live in them. And imagine what the world would say if President Robert Mugabe said that the white people that he's getting off of the land that they stole, their houses would be destroyed. The world would turn on him in a fury, saying that you have all these homeless people in your country and you're going to destroy these white houses? Well, there are millions of homeless Palestinians. Why are you destroying the houses? It's just wicked.
Yeah.
It's wicked.
And also, it was the Israeli general who said that was acid that the Jewish settlers poured on his troops. He said several of his soldiers were wounded by that acid, so I don't know, and then there's some settlers in the West Bank that they're even, you know, they're armed.
Well, there hasn't been they're saying that the reports that I heard this morning is that they've said that they were armed, but there hasn't been any indication. They're throwing ketchup and mustard and things like that at the Israeli military force there. So that remains to be seen.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thanks for your call, Scott.
All right.
454-0400 is my phone number. Get up and get to me. We have much to talk about. Dimitri.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
You know, the reason why all of this government is talking this kind of smack about Hugo Chavez, could I say something in support of President Hugo Chavez?
On this show? What do you think?
Of course. I've been to Venezuela, and I just want to perhaps inform your listeners of why they're going after this president. When he came to light in history first time, he was the leader of an attempted coup to overthrow the government, which was very corrupt and was bleeding the country, using the oil and giving it away. And he was court-martialed for that. But to show you the integrity of his character, he insisted that all of his subordinate officers who were involved in the coup had no responsibility for it. The total responsibility was his own. And so then those officers were released, and he took the big hit and went to jail. And the other thing that he's, another reason why they're talking is kind of smack, is that Hugo Chavez is taking foreign, I've seen this myself, he's taking foreign-owned land that is unused and giving it to the people so that they can do farming.
Yes.
And improve the quality of their lives.
Yes, he's bringing doctors, he's bringing medicine, he's building schools, he's employing his people, he is taking the oil profits and putting it back into his country instead of the pockets of oil, greedy oil, gluttonous oil barons. He's doing the last thing that a capitalistic society wants is a free people. That a free country that practices true democracy with people, with a people-driven free democracy. That's the last thing a capitalistic society wants.
And this capitalistic society is terrified. And I mean, when I say that, I refer to the government.
Absolutely.
It's the fact that he's talking about nationalizing the oil industry.
That's right.
And one other thing, Liz. When I was visiting the St. Elizabeth Island, which is a big island off the coast of Venezuela, I saw these huge refineries that were owned by foreign interests, and the white people down there who worked in the refineries, they lived in the posh luxury hotels that commanded the best beaches on the island, and the people on the island, they're working for $3 and $4 a day, and to add, the irony of the situation is that St. Elizabeth Island doesn't get any rain at all, and so they have to buy their water, and these people have to buy their water while these other people, scumbags that operate the refineries, are living in luxury side by side with these people who barely got enough to live on.
And I got a roll.
Okay.
Thank you, Dimitri.
Thanks.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, we're taking a break. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. Get up. Get to me. We have much to talk about.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Baghdad. Fundamental differences between all sides has caused another delay on a vote for a new Iraq constitution. The U.S.-dictated transitional administrative law currently in place says that if a draft was not finished by August 15th, then Parliament had to be dissolved and new elections would be called. The vote was to be held on the draft on October 15th, with elections scheduled for mid-December. Last week, legislators voted to extend the deadline for 1 week. But now the Speaker of Parliament has declared the deadline has been met and went ahead and scheduled the vote for Thursday. Insiders say there is little chance a consensus will be reached. What was presented last night calls for a loose federation of states with a weak central government. Powerful autonomous regions would be able to capture large portions of oil revenue, and 18 provinces would be given a choice as to forming new independent regions. Kurds would hang on to their regional government in the north, but not get an independent state. Otherwise, Shiites in the south would demand the same thing. Women's organizations held demonstrations in Baghdad over the weekend to protest losing equal rights that were given in the previous constitution. Western and central regions of Iraq that have no oil resources would be left out in the cold as far as finances. And that just happens to be where the bulk of the Sunni population lives, so you can imagine they were not crazy about this draft either. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Friday morning on the wake-up call, reporter Liam Schiff and former researcher Dr. Jonathan Fishbein investigate the AIDS drug experiments done on orphans in New York and Africa. Was it right to use these children as guinea pigs just because their parent, the state, said it was okay? Tune in to find out what's really behind these impenetrable doors of politically guided research. Friday morning at 7 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Looking for time made just for you? Wanting to hear from some young people who are cool and well-informed? Have some questions adults just can't seem to answer? There is a place for you on WGNU Radio. Tune in Sunday nights at 5:30. You'll hear teens talk about stuff teens understand. Find out about the latest in music, sports, and other issues that matter. Finally, a talk show for teens, about teens, by teens on 9:20 a.m. 5:30 Sunday nights. Sponsored by the St. Charles Lwanga Center.
Operation Clean Stream is scheduled for Saturday, August 27th at the Merrimack River. The operation is one of America's longest and largest ongoing river restoration projects in the Merrimack River watershed. To volunteer or find out more about how to become involved in the project, call 636-733-0088 or visit www.openspacecouncilstl.org. Something for you from Radio Free St. Louis.
Scientists and doctors are agreeing more and more that diet can determine whether a person lives a long, healthy life or a life full of unnecessary disease and even death.
I have diabetes, and after gradually changing my diet and getting more exercise, I've noticed my sugar level has become stable and my feet don't swell as much.
My blood pressure has been high for 3 years. Once I stopped eating salt and slowed down on eating oily foods, my blood pressure has gotten back to normal.
It seems like I gained weight just by looking at food. But now that I have the knowledge, and most importantly the discipline, to make conscious healthy choices, my whole life has changed.
Obesity, diabetes, and heart disease cause millions of deaths each year. Every 45 seconds, someone in America suffers from a stroke. Join the battle against these controllable and preventable diseases. Listen to Healthy Alternatives.
Create a healthy future today.
Your computer can bring you the gospel voice of choice every weekend online at WGNU.net. Tuesday morning at 9 on the Wake Up Call, it's our pleasure to bring you author, activist, doctor of economics, and defense analyst Daniel Ellsberg. He was the guy with enough guts to copy the Pentagon report on how decisions were being made in Vietnam and then leak them to the Washington Post and other media because he felt the war was wrong. That report later became known as the Pentagon Papers. Now, his latest book, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, draws some interesting correlations between Vietnam and Iraq, like both being started on a lie. Don't miss author Daniel Ellsberg, Tuesday morning at 9 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Pushing. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. Long distance toll free number 1-877-920-9468. That's 1-877-920-WGNU 454-0400. My website, LizBrown.com. My email, revolution@LizBrown.com. Don't forget, we're archived daily on WhiteRoseSociety.org. We are podcast. Oh, yes, we are. The Wake Up Call is podcast. How cool is that? And, of course, everything on WGNU is broadcast live over the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net from Xenia to Zimbabwe. You can catch the Wake Up Call live on the World Wide Web. I am excited. This is going to be a very... your mental Rolodex will have many new additions after today's show. In our next hour, we're going to have South African labor leader Lebone Mabasa. He was the co-founder with Steve Biko of South Africa's Black Consciousness Movement, and he is the current president of the Socialist Party of Azania, S-O-P-A. He will speak in St. Louis on the decisions of the second session of the International Tribunal on Africa and the International Campaign to Cancel the Apartheid Debt in South Africa. There is no African debt. It is only European debt. There will be a public forum tonight at 7 o'clock at the Richmond Heights Community Center. That's 8001 Dale Avenue, right off of Highway 40 at the Hanley exit. We're going to be talking more about who Lebone Mabasa is. And he really is, he's come to this country. The really cool thing is he's come to this country at our invitation, and by our invitation, I mean the National Black Caucus of the Teamsters Union. His tour is being co-sponsored by the International Liaison Committee of the Workers and Peoples, that's the ILC, and the U.S. Support Committee of the International Tribunal on Africa. And the reason he is here, he wants to talk to those Africans here in America about the struggle for independent workers' political movements in the United States. So we're going to have a good conversation this morning. Lebone Mabasa, he's a longtime leader of South Africa's liberation struggle. That's going to be here in the next hour. My name again is Liz Brown. This is, of course, the Wake Up Call. We're talking about... I don't know, I guess we're talking about dreams. When I lay my head down to sleep at night, mostly I have sweet dreams. Mostly I do. But you gotta wonder, what does a man who says during his waking hours, and not idle musings, that go through people's heads in their solitary moments. This is not an idle musing. This is not a conversation had with yourself in a solitary moment. This is a statement that comes out of the mouth of a man on television who says he is a preacher. He says that the United States should assassinate. Go ahead and get about the business of assassinating a democratically elected president of another country, Hugo Chavez. If he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we ought to go ahead and do it. So you got to ask the question, if he says that in front of God and everybody on television with no shame, no hesitation, and plenty of enthusiasm, with his eyes all squinched up like he's having a conversation with God or something. If he says that during the daylight hours, good God in heaven, what does he dream about? What does a man who advocates the assassination of someone on national television, what does he dream about? Oh, Lord. That's all you can say is, oh, Lord. These are crazy times. Preachers advocating assassination, getting two thumbs up. Mothers of dead war heroes advocating peace, temperance, and an exit strategy out of an illegal war. They get silenced and assaulted. Madness. Madness, 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 madness. Ooh, Lord, this is Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. When we come back, we will be talking to South African, longtime leader of South Africa's liberation struggle, Livon Mabasa. He also ran for the presidency, too. We're going to talk about that. We have so much to talk about, y'all. We're going to get it done in the next hour. 9 o'clock, Daniel Ellsberg. Whew. Keep your babies home from school. Just do it. Just keep your babies home from school. This is too good to miss. I'll be back. Stay with me.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Clarissa Douglas.
The national average price is $2.612 per gallon.
The Energy Department is running a gas price hotline to keep drivers up to date. But it's too late for some motorists, like SUV driver Gary Spaulding in Fulton, New York.
I'm probably going to have to let the Explorer go, which is the gas hive.
Even if you don't own a car, you'll feel the impact of higher prices. Some restaurants, for example, are adding a gasoline fee to delivery orders. There's a commandment that says thou shalt not kill, but Christian TV evangelist Pat Robertson didn't mention that during yesterday's broadcast when he talked about President Hugo Chavez turning Venezuela into a launch pad for Muslim extremists.
Well, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot cheaper than starting a war.
Venezuela is a major supplier of oil to the United States. Evictions are almost finished in the West Bank settlement of Sanur after Israeli troops cleared the town's main synagogue. The BBC's Matthew Price is there.
The last few protesters come out of that synagogue. They are bringing with them the Torah and among them the men who actually built this synagogue. I was here just 3 months ago and there was no roof on it. They were building it at that stage. The Torah being brought out of the synagogue, this a symbolic ritual. The protesters here doing this with dignity, and they are coming out.
Soldiers are also clearing the West Bank enclave of Homesh. Where is Olivia Newton-John's boyfriend, Patrick McDermott? He went on an overnight fishing trip from San Pedro, California, 7 weeks ago. Marina manager John Liversedge.
Some of the passengers that were on the boat, not the crew, but some of the passengers indicated they saw him get off the boat.
Newton-John and McDermott have been together 9 years. This is ABC News.
How would you like to have a low-interest mortgage to sell with your house and let you command a better price? So-called assumable loans can help you get above market value if interest rates rise. A $300,000 home with an assumable loan could be worth another $10,000 to $15,000 for every 1% rise in interest rates. So where do you find them? Winning advice in a moment.
Today's winning advice from Jennifer Openshaw is sponsored by LendingTree. Visit LendingTree.com or call 1-800-555-TREE now to refinance your mortgage and get up to 4 customized offers that you can compare and act on instantly. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. See website for sponsorship details and licensing.
Assumable loans were common 20 years ago, but you can still find them on adjustable rate mortgages and government-backed FHA and VA loans. Some local banks also still offer them. Now, you may have to pay a slightly higher interest rate now, perhaps a 0.25% or so, but it could be worth big money in the future. If the housing market slumps and mortgage rates rise, well, your house could be the only one in town getting multiple bids.
You really want your summer party on the patio to be a flaming success, but not this way.
A flaming tiki torch can set the mood for a backyard barbecue or send everyone screaming. Nearly a million bamboo tiki torches and 18,000 replacement fuel canisters made by Lamplight Farms and sold at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart until last month are being recalled. The manufacturer has received nearly 3 dozen reports of metal flame guards on top of the torches catching fire, sometimes igniting the fuel canister. Several minor injuries reported, along with some property damage. Check LamplightFarms.com for more info. Joan Bennett, ABC News.
Northwest Airlines says about 96% of its flights should take off during the first week of the mechanics strike. The other 4% could be canceled. About 4,400 union mechanics, cleaners, and custodians walked off the job 3.5 days ago. Clarissa Douglas, ABC News.
St. Louis, this is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, some Sunset Hills residents say they are out a lot of money now that Nova's development company has pulled out of a deal to build a shopping center in the area. Claude Whitledge is one of those residents. He says he and his wife bought a new home for more than $150,000 and were counting on the buyout money to pay off the loan.
There is no $119,000 now, as I understand it, and I don't know if there is going to be $119,000, as I understand it. So I've gone from owing nothing to $151,000.
Novus was scheduled to buy out more than 200 homes in the Sunset Manor subdivision to build the shopping center. The development company says their bank pulled out of the deal at the last minute due to lawsuits filed regarding the development project. The 2005 Defense Base Closure and Realignment Commission begins its final deliberations tomorrow to determine the fate of sites across the country, including the National Guard's 131st Fighter Wing at Lambert Field. Between tomorrow and Saturday, commissioners are expected to review and vote on each installation that the Department of Defense has proposed for closure or realignment. The commission's final recommendations will go to President Bush by September 8th. Congressman John Shimkus of Illinois is accepting applications from males and females interested in applying for summer 2006 admission to one of the United States military academies. The congressman is a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point. Applicants seeking the congressman's nomination must be at least 17 years old and no older than 23 years old as of July 1, 2006. To be considered, applicants must be a legal resident of Illinois' 19th Congressional District and be unmarried, not pregnant, and have no obligation to support children or other dependents. For additional information, call 618-344-3065. Finally this hour, Jason Marquis will try to put an end to a six-game losing streak when the Cardinals continue their series with the Pirates at 6:05 this evening. The skid has dropped Marquis' record to 9-12 with a 4.36 ERA, and the Cards are just 1-11 in his last 12 starts. The Redbirds will have to deal with Pirates rookie sensation Zach Duke. The left-hander is 6-0 with a 1.87 ERA to begin his big league career. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Toyota owners, trust those who know your vehicle best. Through September, see your local Toyota dealer to schedule your complimentary tire rotation with the purchase of any regularly priced oil change. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Heritage for the Blind. Eastbound 370 at 94, that off-ramp is reopened after an earlier flat was blocking the ramp. Eastbound 70 at Blanchett Bridge, major road construction, right lane is closed. Crews are finishing up the final stage of bridge work, and traffic is heavy at Fifth Street. Northbound 55 between Union and River DePere, heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 44 between Bowles and Mraz overpass, slow traffic jammed, then in the right lane all from the Merrimack River all the way into 270. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason, you've got slow traffic. Northbound 270 from Teslan Ferry to 44, slow traffic in pockets. Westbound 270 from New Halls Ferry to West Forsyth, slow traffic backed up in the right lane, then from Graham to Hanley, and 170, look for slow volume there as well. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79, look for heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 40 at Spady and Clayton Warson, you've got heavy volume as well. Southbound 55 between Union and Green Park, road construction has two right lanes closed. There are no delays through construction area at this hour. Westbound 5570 split from 64 onto the PSB, stop and go. Westbound 64 at Ball Avenue all the way to the 5570 split, slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank to Laclede's Landing, you've got slow volume there as well. And Telegraph at Ridgetop Drive, there's a report of an injury accident involving a motorcycle. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Heritage for the Blind. Don't sell it, don't trade it. Call 1-800-2-DONATE and donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Call 1-800-2-DONATE for hassle-free pickup. That's 1-800, the number 2-DONATE, or you can visit taxdeduction.com for more details. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly cloudy skies today, high around 80. This evening, mostly clear with a low in the lower 60s. For Wednesday, mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s. Wednesday evening, mostly clear still with a low in the mid-60s. And Thursday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the upper 80s. Currently, at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 69 degrees under cloudy conditions. Lambert Field has 69 and clouds as well. Stay tuned for more of the award-winning Wake Up Call with your host, Liz Brown. She's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Tuesday morning at 9 on the Wake Up Call, it's our pleasure to bring you author, activist, doctor of economics, and defense analyst Daniel Ellsberg. He was the guy with enough guts to copy the Pentagon report on how decisions were being made in Vietnam and then leak them to the Washington Post and other media because he felt the war was wrong. That report later became known as the Pentagon Papers. Now, his latest book, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, draws some interesting correlations between Vietnam and Iraq, like both being started on a lie. Don't miss author Daniel Ellsberg, Tuesday morning at 9 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. Please don't forget, we broadcast live from Xenia to Zimbabwe, all across the world on www.wgnu.net. The wake-up call is archived daily. That's right. Every day you miss an hour, you can go get an hour at whiterosesociety.org. You can email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. That's LizBrown. Or you can check out my website at lizbrown.com. That's LizBrown.com. I'm amazed every day, all over the world, people are checking out lizbrown.com. Now, this morning, we are honored to have with us in the studio Lebone Mabaso, the longtime leader of South Africa's liberation struggle. He was the co-founder with Steve Biko of South Africa's Black Consciousness Movement, and he is the current president of the SOPA. He's going to be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at the Richmond Heights Community Center at 8001 Dale Avenue. That's right off of Highway 40 at the Hanley exit. And Lebone, good morning and welcome.
Good morning and thanks. Thanks very much.
It is my pleasure and honor to have you here. You are the president of the Socialist Party of
Azania.
And a lot of folks in America struggle with or have problems with or think they have problems with the word socialist. Could you define the term for us? Could you define what capitalism is and what socialism is?
I would say a capitalist society is marked by the predominance of private ownership of the means of production, which means a few owns the means of production and a whole lot of people are workers who sell their labor at less than their value. Whereas in a socialist situation, a socialist state would be that the means of production will belong to the majority, which would then mean that the wealth that is produced will be produced precisely for the benefit of society's people.
One of the things that you talk about when I've read about you and the things that you advocate, and one of the reasons why you've come to this country is to talk to black workers. And there, you were part of the Black Consciousness Movement.
I think I'm still part of that movement.
All right. Tell us what that movement was and tell us what that movement is.
Okay. In South Africa, as everybody would know, the struggle was a long-drawn struggle. And that struggle produced organizations that sought to fight and defend and win freedom for their people, starting with the African Native Congress in 1910, which in 1912 changed its name to the African National Congress, today's ANC, the ruling party. And throughout the years, the effort was to organize black people on the basis that South Africa was their country and they were subjugated people by the Dutch, the British, and all the people who played a role in oppressing our people. The Black Consciousness Movement came at the high in 1948. A white minority party took power, led amongst other people by the late Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd, and the apartheid system, which was a system of total and complete separation that denied African people the right to vote and all sorts of things, imposed conditions, even on education. They said black people need not go to school because they should not be exposed to green pastures where they would not be allowed to graze, and therefore black people were reduced to the real lures and choppers of wood, basically.
And one of the things that's profound about the educational component of it is they understood the wickedness of the white minority, understood the power of education, and they understood that if you could continue to uneducate or non-educate people, then you could control the people. And so they began with education because it was very important to control the educational piece.
Well, that is true, but obviously even if it were so, the burden of oppression and suppression was extremely high. Mm-hmm. In itself, it mobilized. Mm-hmm. It mobilized
despite
people.
That.
Despite mm-hmm. and in spite of that. Mm-hmm. It mobilized people. And after the burning of the ANC in 1960 and the Pan-Africanist Congress in the same year, that followed the Sharpeville massacre, where black people were killed because they protested against a system that was even worse than just ordinary racial profiling.
Mm-hmm.
Black people were supposed to produce what was called a dorm pass at any request of any white man, but particularly white policemen, and they introduced the Group Areas Act that limited the movement of black people. They were not allowed into the city. They were not even allowed into towns during the evening. They could only be there at a time when they are waking, but if you were found in the city at night, you would be arrested and all those things. There was a period of a political lull for almost 8 years where the racist government was able to consolidate their plans to expel black people from the cities, expel black people from arable and workable land, and confine them to almost reserve-like centers which were called Bantustans or homelands. And in that situation, lots of people were being arrested for all sorts of things. The Suppression of Communism Act was put into place, and you wouldn't believe the kind of things people would be arrested for. If you open your radio, you come across a militant station like that of Liz Brown, and it is proven that you did listen to such a statement. You would then be arrested, be convicted, and the minimum sentence would be 5 years in Robben Island. And lots of people went to Robben Island for those kind of things. If you write on your coffee mug at work, maybe you write the name Nelson Mandela because you like the man, you'll be advancing the interest of a convicted person, and you'd be arrested, and if it is proven that you did do so, you'd get a minimum sentence of 5 years and you'd go to Robben Island. And it created such fear amongst people that actually they were almost drawn away from politics. And that's where Steve Biko and the Black Conscience Movement came into being in 1968. Of course, the messages were simple. White people had created a notion that black people were a miscarriage of God's plan, mm. that they were inferior, that they were all sorts of things. And the Black Conscience Movement came into the scene first. It started affirming fully the humanity of black people, that they were not a miscarriage of God's plan, but a masterpiece of that which God created. They started dealing with stereotypes that were being created, that which is good is necessarily white, and introduce things like black is beautiful, started discouraging the sisters from using skin lightener, started saying black people should join in a liberation struggle. They should not stand on the sideline of the game they should be playing.
And there was a connection also, wasn't there? I mean, because 1968 was an amazing year. There was a connection with the movement that was going on in America, too, the Black Conscience
Absolutely. And people started connecting, people started reading, people started knowing what other people were saying. And that movement grew in the universities, grew at high school, and started touching the communities in terms of the community projects which were now being put into place. Things like bazaar system, things like building up clinic, the best known being the Zanempilo Clinic, which started recruiting black doctors to come and work and assist our communities and so on. But I suppose the high point of the Black Conscience Movement was the 1976 students' uprising, which changed totally the history of South Africa and actually was the milestone which finally opened the prison gates for Nelson Mandela that finally opened the possibilities that exiles should come back, that opened openly for the first time the students of Soweto stood up and said we were willing to lay our lives for freedom. And when they asked Biko the greatest contribution of the Black Conscious Movement, he answered in one word. He said Soweto. And when they said he must go further to explain, he said the commitment, the direction, and the way in which people were organized clearly shown that they had the message of the Black Consciousness that we are on our own and the responsibility of freedom lies in our own shoulders.
So that brings us to 76. Talk to us about Stephen Biko. Talk to us about your relationship and your organization and that.
Stephen Biko was a very wonderful person. He was not a god. He was human, totally committed to the cause of his people. And he, like all of us, came to know that lots of people can support our struggle. In South Africa, for instance, the white parliament had a party called the Progressive Party. And the Progressive Party was represented by a woman called Helen Suzman. And every time she would stand in parliament, raise issues for black people. But every time she would go back to the pool of privileges of where white people lived. And Steve Biko was amongst the first people to say, no, it can't be. We should not stand on the sideline and listening to or watching a game we should be playing.
I like that, watching a game we should be playing.
Absolutely.
I like absolutely. That.
And that was his statement. He said, no, it's fine to have Helen Suzman, but Helen Suzman does not have the black experience. She does not know what black people experience.
She don't live in Soweto. She don't live in Soweto.
I think before 1976, she had not even been to Soweto.
There you go.
She had not been to Soweto, but she was talking about these things. And therefore, the rallying slogan was that black solidarity is essential for us to be able to carry our tasks. And our tasks were very clear. People say black consciousness was racist, but black consciousness was not racist. We were saying the responsibility of changing society, the responsibility of restoring and giving the human face to the South African community lies with black people. If black people get off the load that is on their backs, they would be able to relate to white people as human beings like themselves. But so long as it's a relationship of an equals, there is no relationship.
Who else to tend to black people's business but black people?
Absolutely, absolutely. So Stephen Biko represented that. He was a leader who was very sensitive, even at a time when we still wanted him to be the leader of the South African student organization. He said, I do not want to create a cult. Let other people take the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very rare because that doesn't happen. People want to be leaders forever.
Mm-hmm.
People want to be leaders for life.
Mm-hmm.
And he started the community projects I talked about, like the building of clinics, like formation schools, starting to take children.
Similar to the Black Panthers.
Absolutely. So he was an extremely important leader with a lot of heart.
Mm-hmm.
But above all, he was a very fearless person. Throughout, he lived with police harassment. He lived with confrontation, and at no time did he ever balk. He would stand his ground. He would represent his people. It was not surprising that when he died, even people like Andy Young, their tribute to him was that if South Africa can kill such a colossus of a leader, then the country has no bright future to look forward to. Even people who today are in the ANC, they acknowledged at those times, if you look at footages that exist, most of them believe that if there's somebody who will be the first president of South Africa, it will be Stephen Biko. But of course, he did not live long enough to see that.
And one of the things that I want to talk when we come back is I want to talk about where South Africa is today.
Okay.
I want to talk about the challenges of South Africa. Let's take a break, folks. I'm Liz Brown. I'm here talking to Laibon Mabasa.
That's correct.
I will be back. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. And also understand that Mr. Mabasa will be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at the Richmond Heights Community Center. That's 8001 Dale Avenue at 7 o'clock. That's right off of Highway 40 at Hanley. And also, he was brought here by the invitation of the National Black Caucus of the Teamsters Union. We'll be back. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Friday morning on the Wake Up Call, reporter Liam Schiff and former researcher Dr. Jonathan Fishbein investigate the AIDS drug experiments done on orphans in New York and Africa. Was it right to use these children as guinea pigs just because their parent, the state, said it was okay? Tune in to find out what's really behind these impenetrable doors of politically guided research. Friday morning at 7 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Eastbound 70 at the Blanchett Bridge is road construction. Right lane is closed, and crews are in the final stage of that bridge work. There are no delays at this hour. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270. Slow traffic in the right lane as you approach 270. Eastbound 44 between Bowles and Meraz Overpass. Slow traffic jammed in the right lane all the way from Merrimack to 270 as well. Eastbound 40 between Timberlake Manor and Mason Road, you've got stop-and-go traffic. Northbound 270 between 55 and Marshall Road is stop-and-go as well. Westbound 270 from 367 to West Florissant, look for stop-and-go traffic in the right lane. Then from New Florissant all the way to 170 is slow as well. Eastbound 70 between K and 79, look for slow volume going on there. Eastbound 40 between Spady and Lindbergh, you've got slow volume as well. Eastbound 40 between Brentwood and Hanley, look for stop-and-go traffic. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley, look for bumper-to-bumper traffic. Westbound 5570 split from 64 on onto the PSP, look for stop-and-go traffic. Westbound 64 at Ball Avenue and the 5570 merge, you have slow traffic as well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the gravel pit onto Laclede's Landing, look for slow volume there. And northbound Route 3 from onto the Poplar Street Bridge, no problems to report. Also another injury accident here. Telegraph at Ridgetop, there's an injury accident involving a motorcycle. And Pelican at Flight Drive, there's an accident involving a pedestrian in Florissant. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Toyota owners, trust those who know your vehicle best. Through September, see your local Toyota dealer to schedule a complimentary tire rotation with the purchase of any regularly priced oil change. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly cloudy skies, high around 80 today. This evening, mostly clear with a low in the lower 60s. Wednesday, mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s. Wednesday evening, mostly clear with a low in the mid-60s. And then on Thursday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the upper 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, under cloudy conditions, we have 69 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 69 and clouds. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hello, this is Regina Ruiz. I would like to invite you to tune in to my broadcast on Sunday afternoons here on WGNU. The program is called Talk to Me. I will be delivering a message to build your faith and improve your life and will be taking your calls live. Listen every Sunday afternoon at 1:30 and talk to me, Regina Ruiz, right here on AM 920 WGNU.
And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? The Old Testament prophet Micah asked that question of his people thousands of years ago. Since 1994, that question has been one of the bedrock values of hope for the nations. In 20 countries around the world, Hope for the Nations turns today's orphans into tomorrow's leaders, provides security so children can become confident young people, actively trains them to become productive leaders in their society, and helps their communities to become self-sufficient. Learn more about Hope for the Nations and how you can become part of their worldwide ministry. Go online at www.hopeforthenations.com. That's www.hopeforthenations.com. Hope for the Nations, turning today's orphans into tomorrow's leaders since 1994. What is the Lord requiring of you? Tuesday morning at 9 on the Wake Up Call, it's our pleasure to bring you author, activist, doctor of economics, and defense analyst Daniel Ellsberg. He was the guy with enough guts to copy the Pentagon report on how decisions were being made in Vietnam and then leak them to the Washington Post and other media because he felt the war was wrong. That report later became known as the Pentagon Papers. Now, his latest book, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, draws some interesting correlations between Vietnam and Iraq, like both being started on a lie. Don't miss author Daniel Ellsberg, Tuesday morning at 9 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
For the millions of Africans chained to the slave ships, for the millions of scars on their backs and face by the bullwhip, for the millions who jumped overboard, for the blood that poured on the shores of North America, South America, Central America, and Europe. And each ripple in the ocean is a grave for an African who refused to be a slave. For the millions who cut the cane, pick the cotton.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. And, of course, we are on the Internet, on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. LizBrown.com is my website. Pick me up, archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. I am here this morning. We're talking about South Africa. We are talking about the connection between the fight, the issues, the struggle in North America, here in the United States, and in South America, and South America and in South Africa. Our guest this morning is South African labor leader Lebone Mabasa, and we were talking about Stephen Biko. We're getting through the years to working our way towards 2005. So let's start. Let's go to 1994. Can we jump to 1994?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, after in February 2nd, mm-hmm. 1990, the white racist president F.W. de Klerk announced the unbanning of political organizations, mainly the African National Congress and the Pan-Africanist Congress, and that set into motion the process of negotiation.
So organizations, parties that had been banned before, were now
declared legal.
Legal.
Mm-hmm. At the World Trade Center in Kempton Park, it's almost negotiations started to take place in South Africa. There were lots of things which they needed to agree upon before a new democratic constitution was to come into place. But I think while that process was important, maybe one of the major losses for black people occurred during that negotiations, because one of the four principles that should underpin a new constitution was the property rights agreements.
Because this is the issue that's defining Zimbabwe. This is the issue for black Africans all over the continent.
Absolutely.
Who owns the land that was stolen?
Yeah, absolutely. The property rights, its provision simply said whatever anyone owned in South Africa, the legality of the ownership should not be questioned. How you acquired what you owned should not be questioned. And
so
in that agreement, it simply meant that the lands that were stolen were not going to be brought back to black people, that the wealth that white people have was not going to be challenged, and that if indeed a challenge did come, should come through the process of willing seller and willing buyer. Once that concession was made,
now this is the underpinning of the eventual constitution
absolutely.
Of South Africa.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I don't think that a lot of people understand that or know that the deal is that black people were never going to get their land back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, because it created a notion that all is equal, you would remember that white people owned 87% of the land. Black people only owned 13%. White people were better resourced to even buy into the 13% that was owned by black people.
And you also had to be a black person that had money to buy the land.
That's the point I'm making.
So, I mean, you couldn't be a person who had no money and put yourself in a position trying to get the land because you had to be a capable buyer.
Absolutely. And to what has happened is that because of those kind of agreements, in the new democracy today, black people indeed have the strongest political voice. But that political voice is not coupled with economic muscle. The wealth of the country is still owned by a few, up to 98% of it. I think what's in the hand of black people is the few who have been drawn in or chosen or handpicked,
compromised,
and the overwhelming majority of black people are in a worse off situation. The UNDP...
In a worse situation. Black
Absolutely.
People are in a worse situation than prior to apartheid.
The United Nations Development Program wrote a report on South Africa 2 years ago and said black people were in a much worse situation than they have ever been even under apartheid. And it is true, unemployment, there's so much unemployment because the government has embarked on programs of privatization and, you know, the kind of things which they are demanding of Chavez in Venezuela. There are a reality in our country in that privatization has become the political economic program of government. And lots of people lose their jobs. People wonder why teachers leave South Africa, go to England, come to the United States and so on, whereas those historically were the most secured jobs. But because of privatization of state, of public utilities, people find themselves without jobs today, downsizing and whatever terms you are using. And of course, the excuse will always be that we are pursuing the global economy, whatever that animal is.
What is the ANC's position on, because ANC was at the table when these foundational agreements were made. The ANC was there.
It was the key party.
It was the key party that agreed to this. So is what the ANC saying today, are they saying today that it was a good deal, that we should continue to adhere by this? What are the people out in the streets saying about these underpinning agreements?
Well, I think these underpinning agreements are causing a lot of problems. I'm sure lots of people are aware that South Africa is almost in the same turmoil it was in around about 85,
86. But it's kind of like the United States where I think that people of African descent here are in a quagmire politically and in activism-ly wise because the signs came down. You know, the no colored only or the colored only signs came down, so you don't have the same rallying points. You don't have the same organizational tool when the signs are up. This is what the enemy is. Now who is the enemy in South Africa?
Well, lots of people supported the ANC. It represented the best of the liberation movement. Nelson Mandela spending 27 years in jail, and they had hoped that in 10 years maybe even if things don't change dramatically in the first or second year, by 10 years they would have changed.
How did it work out?
But the fact that it hasn't changed, that's what's causing this turmoil. There are strikes everywhere. There are communities who are standing. I think when I left on the 16th of August, there had been already more than 8 labor, national labor strikes, because people are saying we are getting the shorter end of the stick.
Shorter end of
the stick. That it isn't working for us. Communities are rising up and saying we are having to buy water for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That we do not have electricity, that we do not have sanitation, that we still use the bucket system as our toilets in the new democracy. And these people are aware that this is a rich country. It's the country of gold, it's a country of platinum, it's a country of diamonds, it's a country of great wealth. Those who have become wealthy are not just wealthy, they are extremely wealthy.
We're not talking millionaire wealthy, beyond that.
We're talking dollar billionaires.
American dollar billionaires.
Absolutely.
So where does your party work into this? Well, because you ran in the year 2004. You called 2004 a pivotal year. You even wanted to tour the United States to
Absolutely.
Talk to us about how we needed to have a black person running for the
Absolutely.
President. So
Absolutely.
Talk to us about the race in 2004.
Absolutely. We as the Socialist Party of Azania, we ran under a slogan. Our rallying slogan was people before profit. Because our understanding of the situation is that things are becoming worse because the government has committed itself to the market economic system. That's what they say, that they have adopted policies that continue to disadvantage most particularly black people, and that so long as the country wants to create the wealthy few. The president of the country has not hidden his agenda that he wants to create a black middle class. Mm-hmm. And we know that that class would not be created in order to help the most disadvantaged of the community, but will be created as a buffer zone that argues that because they have made wealth, it is possible for ordinary people to make wealth. And we know it's not true.
Oprah's a billionaire, so everybody can be a billionaire.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we have had to go out and tell people that we need a different framework. We need a framework that prioritizes our people and their needs. We need a framework that would speak to the poverty of our people, that would advocate public hospitals to be properly facilitated and to have all what is needed, public schools, because in South Africa, for instance, public hospitals are a dying phenomenon.
Mm.
If you go to there's a hospital in Johannesburg called Baragwanath Hospital. It used to be said to be one of the best hospitals in the world.
Mm.
But today, if you go to Baragwanath, you'll be lucky to get a painkiller. You'll be lucky to sleep in clean hospital bedding. You'll be lucky to have decent food in that hospital because of outsourcing, downsizing, privatization, and so on. And we are saying in order to defend our people, we need to defend those gains which our people had won through struggle. Because for Baragwanath to have been the best hospital, it wasn't because the white racist regime was magnanimous and benevolent. It represented the struggle of the workers to defend these hospitals. Now, we want to defend those things. We want to defend the gains which we had won so that they should not be liquidated. In South Africa, we had won the 40-hour week. Today, you can work for up to 60 hours, and it will not be overtime.
We
want to defend those things.
And we have to take a break. This is Liz Brown. Oh, we have much, much, much more to talk about. I am here with Lebone Mabasa, and we're talking about South Africa. There are a lot of similarities. There are a lot of parallels between what's happening over there and what's happening to black folks over here. We'll be back to continue that conversation, folks. Stay with us.
you've heard it since the day you were born.
Someday you'll go to college.
And as you grew, you began to believe what you heard.
You could be anything you want to be.
Until it became something you couldn't ignore.
I can be a teacher.
I can run my own company.
I can change my career.
Now there's a place that can help you reach your dream. College Zone. CollegeZone.com, powered by the Illinois Student Assistance Commission, is the trusted source for college information. You can go to college. Visit CollegeZone.com.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Detroit. Teachers in Motown vote on a strike today. School officials are demanding wage cuts and slashing other benefits. A scheduled wage increase has been put on hold, and hundreds of teaching positions have also been eliminated. Leadership for the Detroit Federation of Teachers is coming under fire for caving into the district too much. Over the past 2 years, they accepted a pay freeze that locked out any scheduled increases, and they also went along without objection to layoffs of teachers and other support staff. And Dateline Lagos. A four-day conference in Nigeria wound up with a warning about the African fishing industry. Experts say overfishing of waters and no long-term investment in the industry has created a crisis situation. Fishing is crucial to the African economy. It provides $3 billion of export revenue a year, plus helps feed the populace. Industry analysts say stocks are so depleted due to large-scale commercial farming operations that a 20% increase in fish farming will be necessary just to maintain consumption at current levels. Fish catches have been on the downswing in recent years. The fishing business is crucial to people's livelihoods as well, because some 10 million people work in the fishing industry in Africa. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Friday morning on the wake-up call, reporter Liam Schiff and former researcher Dr. Jonathan Fishbein investigate the AIDS drug experiments done on orphans in New York and Africa. Was it right to use these children as guinea pigs just because their parent, the state, said it was okay? Tune in to find out what's really behind these impenetrable doors of politically guided research. Friday morning at 7 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Akbar Electric, Commercial Industrial Residential, 3737 North Kings Highway, 382-2568. 382-2568. Any and all electrical installation and rehab, basic service installation, light fixtures, dusk to dawn lighting, motion sensors, no job is too big, no job is too small. 35 years of experience. Akbar Electric. Give them a call. 382-2568.
Tuesday morning at 9 on the Wake Up Call, it's our pleasure to bring you author, activist, doctor of economics, and defense analyst Daniel Ellsberg. He was the guy with enough guts to copy the Pentagon report on how decisions were being made in Vietnam and then leak them to the Washington Post and other media because he felt the war was wrong. That report later became known as the Pentagon Papers. Now, his latest book, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, draws some interesting correlations between Vietnam and Iraq, like both being started on a lie. Don't miss author Daniel Ellsberg, Tuesday morning at 9 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. We are talking about South Africa, or we're talking about Azania. And my
land of black people. What it means.
Land of black people.
Yeah.
Azania.
Yeah.
Mm. Let's talk about, we were talking about where Azania is right now and the struggle that is going on within in the country as of this hour as we speak.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the election in 2004. What did the election in 2004
tell us? What do the election results tell us about what is going on in South Africa, Azania?
The same thing the elections say everywhere, that a lot of money is being used to buy the opinion of people. But for instance, we participated in the election with very or almost no budget, basically.
Well, the dates were changed at the election too to make it more difficult for you to get the money that you needed to
absolutely,
run.
Absolutely, absolutely, and. The issue, we always argue that in South Africa there are two parties. The parties that support the market system, which are almost all the parties that are in parliament today.
And including the ANC?
Well, the ANC has not hidden that it supports the capitalist system, capitalist mode of production, and is the leading party in parliament. And all others, they come in the name of religion, they come in the name of, but all of them are agreed that the capitalist mode of production is the best mode. The result is that it has really created a nightmare for our people. It has created the conditions that are totally unfathomable, because we had thought in the new situation at least our people will get a break, and they are not getting a break. Education is more expensive. Health, they have no jobs.
No housing.
Unemployment has reached, at official statistics say, up to 40%. But
one of the things that I thought that it was just amazing is the life expectancy has changed in 10 years.
It has changed greatly from round about 74 to 35 to 41, which means at my age, I'm 53, I should have been long dead, because South Africa accounts for the greatest number of people who are infected with HIV AIDS. Almost 5 million people are infected. The statistics that are given, they say in the next 10 years, about 20 million people will die. We guess up to 80% of that figure will be that of South Africa. A total devastation of the country and its people. Given what is happening today, life is becoming extremely difficult for our people. But what we have realized is that our conditions in South Africa are not different from conditions of many people in the African continent. That the struggle that we are waging is totally and utterly linked to the struggles of African people, even struggles of African American people here in the United States. That's why we had called for the International Tribunal on Africa to judge those responsible for this evil evolution that is threatening the very existence of the African continent. And we realized that the problems of Africa started with the slave trade, went through to colonialism, and today the tyranny of the debt is imploding the economies of Africa. It's imploding the economics of South America and all developing countries. And we say we should be one in this struggle.
What is the debt in the European debt in South Africa? Because you off the air, you talked about what the world said about apartheid, okay. and then now with connection with the debt.
The debt in South Africa is quite huge. If it needs at least $8 billion U.S. dollars every year to service it, you would know that it's quite huge.
Not to pay it off, but
just to service it. Nobody pays the debt, you just service it. It's an albatross around your neck that makes you not to be able to do anything. There is no country that really pays the debt. You are called upon to service it, and every year it goes up, it fluctuates with the market system.
But one of the things that you talked about was that how the world defined the criminalness of apartheid, but yet the debt, this $8 billion a year debt, is all a result of the racist, wicked, horrible regime of apartheid.
But the IMF had said, and they said it to me, on the 7th of February, 1994, I was part of a 70-country delegation that went to the IMF to demand the cancellation of the apartheid debt. And I put these facts in front of the IMF officials. And they said, no, that debt cannot be cancelled. We have agreed with those who are negotiating that this debt must be paid, and therefore that's why we are servicing that debt.
Who did they talk to? Who were they referring to?
They were talking to people they were talking to in the Convention for a Democratic South Africa, CODESA, the process that brought in the new constitution and the new democracy. They were talking to ANC leaders. They were talking to the oppressing nationalist party. They were talking to all the people who participated in that process.
So the same people that ensured that the 80% white property owners that got to steal and keep their land were the same people who cut the deal with the IMF.
Absolutely. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that. They cut that deal. They cut the deal. That was one of the underpinning constitution, that there will be continuation of government. We are not setting a new system. We are taking over the old system with all its liability, and the debt was part of the liability. And the debt was taken to ameliorate white living standard, was taken to strengthen security apparatus, the jail, the police, and the ability of the racist regime to shoot fighters at the borders.
And in terms of the we have 2 minutes, 1 minute, 1 minute here. The future of Azania.
The future of Azania lies with its people. We dare to struggle because we think it is possible to win a better future for our people. And that better future can only be advanced and enhanced if it's taken beyond the borders of South Africa to the United States, black people in the United States, to Brazil and other countries.
Tonight at 7 o'clock, you can hear more of Laibo Mabasa. He will be speaking at the Richmond Heights Community Center. That's 8001 Dale Avenue, right off of 40. And Hanley, in the Hanley exit, he is being sponsored by the International Liaison of Committee of Workers and People. Also, he is here at the invitation of the National Black Caucus of the Teamsters Union. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. My absolute pleasure. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. We're going to be back, folks. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with us.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
The latest from ABC News. I'm Clarissa Douglas. As gas prices continue creeping up, the economic impact becomes more profound on drivers and non-drivers alike. And some experts warn this is turning into a problem for the Bush administration.
Now that we're over $2.50 and looking at $3, this has become not only a big pocketbook issue for millions of Americans, but it's also now starting to bubble as a very significant political issue.
Daniel Juergen with Cambridge Energy Research Associates. The government says the average is around $2.61 per gallon. The head of Iraq's Constitutional Committee now says 3 days might not be enough for the committee to finish the draft. Sunni Arabs are balking at parts of it. Interim Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafri, speaking through an interpreter at a news conference in Baghdad, says the birth of a constitution takes a long time and a lot of give and take.
If we don't adopt this policy and we are confined to our personal interest, no constitution will be born.
There's been no further comment from televangelist Pat Robertson over his comment during yesterday's broadcast of the 700 Club. He vilified Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez.
He has destroyed the Venezuelan economy, and he's going to make that a launching pad for communist infiltration and Muslim extremism all over the continent.
And he went on to suggest the U.S. should assassinate Chavez. Joseph Edward Duncan III will be in court later today in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, to enter a plea in the murders of three family members. He's also accused of kidnapping Shasta Grony and her brother Dylan and of killing the boy. ABC News legal analyst Royal Oaks.
If the allegations against Duncan are proven, he is a prime candidate for the death penalty.
Duncan is also accused of molesting 8-year-old Shasta. This is ABC News.
Hey, I'm Tom, and today's my 9th day with Prilosec OTC. Because of frequent heartburn, I couldn't even enjoy my kids' games, but with Prilosec OTC, that's all changed. Now, when my daughter's soccer team takes on the Wolverines, I'm there yelling.
She really hates that.
Imagine zero heartburn for 24 hours with one pill a day. It's possible with Prilosec OTC. It's day 9 for me. What day are you on?
Use as directed for 14 days for treating frequent heartburn.
Get the good stuff.
Even with today's high-tech engines, a good old-fashioned oil change is still the most important maintenance you can do. It improves fuel economy and dependability and helps you avoid costly repairs. Right now at Napa Auto Parts, you can get Castrol GTX conventional motor oil for just $1.79 per quart. And Castrol Syntec full synthetic motor oil for just $4.19 per quart. Price does not include state and local taxes or recycling fees.
Get the good stuff.
Napa, get the good stuff.
President Bush is relaxing in his own private Idaho today after yesterday's speech to the VFW convention in Utah. ABC's Ann Compton is traveling with the president.
With unusual directness aimed at his critics, President Bush cited the cost of the war in American lives.
We've lost 1,864 members of our armed forces in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And 223 in Operation Enduring Freedom.
Such bluntness comes in the face of protests which followed him from Crawford to Utah to here in Boise, Idaho, where the public will get no glimpse of the president as he mountain bikes for recreation. Ann Compton, ABC News, with the president in Idaho.
Tomorrow, the president speaks in Boise to the National Guard troops and their families. Oil prices remain stuck above $65 a barrel, with lingering worries about adequate supplies. Clarissa Douglas, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, Illinois health officials confirmed that a 79-year-old Cook County man has been diagnosed with West Nile disease, bringing the number of cases reported this year to 29 statewide. Last year, Illinois recorded 60 human cases of the disease, including 4 deaths. The disease is transmitted through the bite of a mosquito that has picked up the virus by feeding on an infected bird. The ongoing strike by Northwest Airlines mechanics is not affecting operations at Lambert St. Louis International Airport. A Lambert spokesperson says that despite the strike, things are running smoothly. Northwest Airlines has 18 daily flights in and out of Lambert and nearly 80 employees. Only 16 of these employees are among those on strike nationwide. Local supporters of stem cell research are hoping to see a new development move forward. Scientists from Harvard Medical School and the Howard Hughes Medical Institute say they have found a way to create new embryonic stem cells by fusing ordinary skin and bone cells with embryonic stem cells. The researchers say it would provide a way to create medical treatments without creating a human embryo. Sandra Ost of the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures says the full impact of this new development remains to be seen.
From the perspective of folks like me, I had breast cancer 3.5 years ago. My mother died of Alzheimer's last year. We are absolutely supportive of science moving forward so we can find some better cures and therapies for some of these diseases.
While the new cells have passed 2 tests identifying true embryonic stem cells, researchers say the method is not perfected yet. The research will appear in this week's issue of the journal Science. Finally this hour, Adam Archuleta is headed back to strong safety for the Rams. Head coach Mike Martz made the announcement in his press conference yesterday, saying the Rams' defense is better off with Archuleta at strong safety. The 50-year pro out of Arizona State played at free safety in the Rams' preseason loss to the Chargers on Sunday after predominantly serving as a strong safety since the beginning of his career. Archuleta will try to shore up the Rams' rush defense, which gave up 215 yards on 34 carries against the Chargers on Sunday. The Rams' next preseason game is Monday night in Detroit against the Lions. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Heritage for the Blind. Don't sell it, don't trade it. Call 1-800-2-DONATE and donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Call 1-800-2-DONATE for hassle-free pickup. 1-800-2-DONATE or visit taxdeduction.com. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Eastbound 70 at the Blanchette Bridge Road construction right lane is closed as crews are putting the final stages on bridge work. There are no delays in the construction area at this hour. Eastbound 44 between Bowles and 270. Look for slow volume there. Eastbound 40 between Timberlake Manor and Mason Road is stop and go. Northbound 270 between 55 and 44, stop and go traffic there as well. Westbound 270 between 367 and West Florissant, look for bumper to bumper traffic in the right lane. Then from New Florissant to 170, look for stop and go traffic as well. Westbound 255 from Jefferson Barracks Bridge to Lindbergh, expect normal traffic in your 8 a.m. commute. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79, look for bumper to bumper as well. Eastbound 40 between Spady and Hanley, you've got slow traffic in pockets. Westbound 70 at 94, there's road construction, left lane is closed. Westbound 64, or 40, at is slow from Hampton to 270. Northbound 270 from 40 to Ladue, look for slow volume in the left lane. Westbound 5570 split from 203 onto the PSB, look for stop and go traffic in your 8 a.m. commute. Westbound 64 between 25th and the 5570 split, look for slow volume there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the 5570 split onto Laclede's Landing, it is very heavy in your 8 a.m. commute. And also northbound Illinois Route 3 from 8th Street on the PSB, look for slow traffic as well. Lindbergh between Sappington and Baptist Church is a report of an accident, and that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, trust those who know your vehicle best. Through September, your local Toyota dealer can schedule a free complimentary tire rotation with the purchase of any regularly priced oil change. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly cloudy skies today, high around 80. This evening, mostly clear with a low in the lower 60s. Wednesday, mostly sunny, a high in the lower 80s. Wednesday evening, mostly clear once again with a low in the mid-60s. And then on Thursday, partly cloudy skies, high in the upper 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, under partly cloudy conditions, we have 68 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 68 and some clouds as well. Stay tuned for Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Friday morning on the wake-up call, reporter Liam Schiff and former researcher Dr. Jonathan Fishbein investigate the AIDS drug experiments done on orphans in New York and Africa. Was it right to use these children as guinea pigs just because their parent, the state, said it was okay? Tune in to find out what's really behind these impenetrable doors of politically guided research. Friday morning at 7 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell the brothers how to understand. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell the brothers how to understand.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you and people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you took a knife and knife back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
Revolution in the air, tell the brothers how to listen.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more. struggle against the common enemies of man: tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. We have much to talk about. In the next hour, of course, we're going to be joined by Daniel Ellsberg. You know him, Pentagon Papers, his recent book, Secrets, a Memoir of Vietnam, and the Pentagon Papers. We're going to be talking about Valerie Plame. We're going to be talking about Iraq. We're going to be talking about the Gulf of Tonkin. We're going to be talking about a whole lot of stuff, peace, activism, political stuff. You don't want to miss it. This hour, we are talking about... it's almost like everything that we do and say and participate in is connected in the most amazing ways. Politically, we have passed all kinds of bills and put all kinds of things into law. In October, there's a rush right now in courthouses all over this country. Poor folks, middle-class folks, folks who want to be able to be middle-class folks, are rushing to courthouses in order to beat the deadline, the October deadline, where the new bankruptcy laws are going to take place. Bankruptcy laws that benefit financial institutions, bankruptcy laws that make it okay and easy still for businesses to declare and non-persons to declare bankruptcy, but makes it impossible for poor people to get afresh, to get a clean start, despite the fact that most people declare bankruptcy because of hospital bills, because of a divorce, or because of a job change. Also, recently we have passed laws that have made it more difficult, challenging, if not impossible, for people to sue doctors, to sue hospitals for wrongs that they have committed. So the story that we're going to talk about this hour kind of begs the question, given that political fact. Why are things a little bit easier and being made easier for those that do wrong to get punished? On July 12th, there was a report released by the Pennsylvania Care Cost Containment Council. And it's a startling, what comes out of this report is startling and scary, given the fact that we have so little, there's so few protections anymore. To talk about this report, I have joining me from Philadelphia, Beth McConnell, director of PennPerg. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Talk to us about this incredible report released by the Pennsylvania Healthcare Cost Containment Council, the PHC4.
Yeah, this report was incredibly groundbreaking. It showed that in Pennsylvania in 2004, hospitals reported that more than 11,600 patients got infections in the hospital while seeking medical care. So those are infections that could have been prevented, many of them. They're often the result of inadequate sanitary practices or failure to use effective prevention procedures.
Like washing your hands.
Like washing hands or sterilizing equipment properly. And it not to mention the costs, but really it also led to the death of about 1,800 Pennsylvanians in the state that year.
And deaths are very clear to understand, or you understand what death means. You're not here anymore. But the people that got infection, some of these people have infections that will be, or the results of those infections will be with them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I've heard stories about people that get infections in hospitals, and they think that it's cleared up, but it flares up again and again and again, and it causes some really serious health problems. And these are people that already had some health problems when they went into the hospital in the first place, so they really can't afford to get sicker.
And when we talk about the things that cause these infections, you said inadequate sanitary practices. What is that?
Well, for example, if trash bins aren't emptied regularly and there's bacteria, for example, that might be spreading throughout the hospital, hand washing techniques, I think, are just one of the most obvious and biggest examples where doctors or nurses or other medical professionals simply aren't washing their hands, or if they are, they're not doing a good enough job. Or, you know, the way that certain surgeries are done, there can be certain procedures that are used that are safer and reduce the risk of infection than others. So it can be very complicated, and sometimes it can be very simple, like cleaning up.
Now, do we know that things have gotten worse? Does this report indicate that things have gotten worse, or do we know that the reasons why the garbage cans are not being emptied or hands are not being washed because of the high turnover in hospitals or the inadequate number of people that they have working in hospitals or the lack of training of people that they're hiring now due to cost-saving measures? Do we know that these high infection rates are the result of that? Do we have anything to compare this to?
Well, unfortunately, we don't, and that's what makes this report so groundbreaking. It is the very first time any state or any federal, not even the federal government, has collected data directly from hospitals so that we can get a scope of how big this problem really is. No one has done that before, and certainly no one has released any information to the public before. So this is a very first step, and we need to watch very closely at the reports in the coming years and months. And the other thing we need hospitals specific information so that, you know, patients know if their hospital where their loved ones are seeking treatment, whether or not they're doing a good job or a bad job.
Well, what caused this hospital to compile the data for this, and what caused them to release this? Because it doesn't seem like it would be in their interest to release this.
Yeah, certainly the Hospital Association in Pennsylvania has fought this for a number of years and delayed implementation of these rules for a number of years. But the reason why we're able to collect this data now is because we do have a law on the books in Pennsylvania that dates back to the 1980s that created this agency called the Pennsylvania Healthcare Cost Containment Council. We call it PHC4. And it gives the PHC4 the authority to collect this data from hospitals, and it makes the hospitals comply. But because hospitals have fought for so long, it's not until now, today, or July, that we're finally starting to get some information. But the hospitals are still dragging their feet, and so we still have far to go.
Could the data be worse than what this first report has indicated?
It most certainly is. This report is very limited. It only covers four kinds of infections. There are certainly more than just four kinds of infections at hospitals. And also the number of hospitals that complied with the reporting rules was not fantastic. PHC4 specifically pointed out that 16 hospitals, including a couple of large ones, reported that they had absolutely no infections. That is just totally outrageous. And so most likely the hospitals they're just not reporting because they don't want this information to get out into the public. There are some hospitals that made a good faith effort and got some information into the state. They should be commended, but we still have far to go with the other hospitals.
Are there any teeth in these rules or regulations? I mean, do you get punished if you just, nope, no infections here. Do you get punished for saying silly stuff like that?
Yeah, hear no evil, see no evil.
There you go.
Yeah, the PHC-4 does have the authority to fine hospitals if they don't comply and also has the authority to audit hospitals that aren't complying. And we've urged them to do that if at the next reporting deadline, which is this fall, we don't see an improvement and we don't see all the hospitals complying. So we want the agency to start using those enforcement powers right away because Pennsylvania patients and, quite frankly, patients across the country can't wait any longer to find out how bad this problem is.
What can a patient do with this information? Okay. You come out of the hospital, you have an infection, can you use this data to file a lawsuit against the hospital? Can you do that?
Not right now, and it's unclear whether or not that information will ever be useful in one specific case, although certainly specific information about your specific case or your loved one's case, you know, might be bolstered if there's proof that the hospital has a bad track record. But right now, in Pennsylvania, the data that we have is statewide. It's not hospital-specific, so it's very difficult to pinpoint to any one particular hospital. Again, we think that has to change, and that's the direction that the state is moving in. But most of the lawsuits are about specific doctors and specific actions and specific patients. This information won't be traceable back to any one doctor, but again, should be traceable back to the hospital at large.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, if you have a pattern of behavior, if a hospital has a pattern of, quite frankly, nastiness, sure. Then it seems like that might be able to be used in a case in some respect.
It really does depend on the situation, how bad it is. But
my question is specifically, is there something within the rules or the guidelines that say that the information cannot be used in that way?
It does not.
Okay.
But I think you're right to note it because I think it's something we'd have to watch out for. Certainly we're seeing an attack on consumers' rights and patients' rights to sue across the board. And any time information like this is out there and it shows wrongdoing, our rights get taken away versus the rights of those that are guilty of the wrongdoing. So I think we have to be careful and watch for that and stop any efforts to take those rights away from patients.
What were the circumstances that led to the creation of this law?
Well, the agency itself, the PHC-4, was created specifically because of rising health care costs and the desire to want to collect information in the state so we could kind of get to the heart of the matter. Why are costs rising and what can we do to bring them down? And this, you know, particularly I think is a shining example of the incredible amount of waste financially in our healthcare system and how we need to fix problems like this, not only for our health and safety, but also financially, so that we have the resources we need to make sure that everybody has access to safe, quality, affordable health care.
And the waste component comes from the cost that it costs to wash your hands as opposed to treat the person who got an infection as a result of being in the hospital.
Exactly. The amount of money that we spend on hospital-acquired infections is staggering. This report alone suggests that we incurred an additional $2 billion with a B dollars in healthcare costs in Pennsylvania because of hospital-acquired infections over that year. $2
billion.
And that's just in Pennsylvania. Now think of what we could do with $2 billion.
And that's just in Pennsylvania.
It's just in Pennsylvania, it's just this one year, and it's just for a limited number of infections.
And not all the hospitals reported.
Exactly.
So does the PHC-4, do they exist in other cities or other states?
Some states might have a similar kind of agency that collects and tracks data. Mm-hmm. And some other states where you don't have an agency like that, that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have a law on the books that requires hospital infection rate reporting to the Department of Health, for example. In fact, I do believe that Missouri does have a law on the books. It hasn't yet been completely implemented yet, but Florida, Illinois, and Missouri currently have similar laws so you may start to see some of this information in your state in the coming years.
And in terms of the political support for this, what have we seen in Pennsylvania?
Well, it's interesting. This is an issue that really cuts across party lines. You know, Republicans and Democrats, fiscal conservatives and liberals, no one wants to waste dollars on health care, and no one wants people to get sick who shouldn't be and die who shouldn't. And so it's been very... we've seen a lot of support, I think, from all sides of the aisle in Pennsylvania from those particular groups of people. But unfortunately, again, the hospitals who obviously have a lot to lose from this information becoming public, have been less than supportive and have certainly fought some of these rules.
Does the organization PHC4, do they have a consumer component of it where they get the information, they file the reports, but a report filed doesn't mean that the consumers know about it? Is there a consumer education component to it?
Exactly. Well, I think that's also where my organization comes in. My organization, PennPIRG, is the Pennsylvania Public Interest Research Group, and we're a nonprofit citizen group. We're a consumer group. And so once our job really is to make sure that the PHC4 not only gets the information they need to get, releases the information to the public, but that they also do it in a way that the average patient and the average consumer can understand it and use it. And it's also our job to make sure that that is then publicized and we educate our members and other citizens in Pennsylvania so that we can demand solutions and demand change. And I do believe that the state agency, the PHC4, wants that. I think long term their goal is to reduce these infections and protect patients just as ours is, but they're a state agency and they're under political pressure. We're a nonprofit group, so we can push them further, and I think we're going to need to keep doing that.
So what is your plan? What is PennPIRG's plan or strategy to get this information out and to get them to go further than what they have?
Well, our next step is to make sure that at the next reporting deadline, that the hospitals have to report every quarter. So the next quarterly deadline, which is coming up this fall, that we see full and complete compliance with every hospital in the state. And if they're not doing that, we're going to be calling on the PHC4 publicly and in the media and through outreach to our members to use their audit and fines to get those hospitals in compliance. And then we're going to be pushing to make sure we get hospital-specific reports in 2006. And we're also pushing the PHC4 to expand the reporting rules. Again, right now they're only collecting data on four kinds of infections. They need to collect data on all kinds of infections. So we've been pushing the PHC4 to do that. They've agreed and have said publicly that they will begin to collect that data in January of this year. We need to make sure that happens. And then once we get to that point where that information is out in the public, we want to make sure we educate our members and other citizens so that they can make smart choices about where to seek treatment.
And do you get the sense that other states across the country are watching what happens in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I'm watching very closely, and I think it's made a lot of people very nervous in Pennsylvania. But we're the first state ever to do anything like this, and so states all across the country are considering similar legislation or have adopted legislation recently. And so if we don't do a good job here of enforcing these rules, it's going to severely weaken or hamper the efforts in other states. So that's really important. Everybody is watching. This report has made international news, and so it's a really important time for us to make sure that the rights of patients and the concern of patients are first and foremost and that we do right by them.
It's huge. 11,600 patients got infections while seeking medical care. That's just wild. That is just wild.
Unbelievable.
And where can people get a copy of this report?
Well, they visit the PHC4's website at www.phc4.org. They can see the full report. If they'd like to see a press release or some commentary from consumer groups such as my organization, PennPIRG, and Consumers Union, they can go to www.pennpirg.org. That's PennPIRG.org.
Beth McConnell, thank you so much for joining us. Director of PennPIRG, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call this morning.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, The Wake Up Call. I will be back after this break. Stay with us. Don't forget, in the next hour, Daniel Ellsberg will be joining us. Ooh, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. A lot of stuff to talk about, but we'll be taking your calls when I get back at 454-0400, 1-877-920-WGNU, LizBrown.com, revolution@LizBrown.com. Stay with me.
And I'm thinking this man wears a white hood in the night when his children should sleep. But they'll slip through their windows and they'll see him. And they'll think that white hood's all they need. It's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life. It's a hard life wherever you go. And if we poison our children with hatred, in the hard life, it's all that they'll know.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Heritage for the Blind. Eastbound 44 at Grand is a disabled vehicle. Shoulder is blocked and first reported as a car fire. Now it's just a blockage on the shoulder. Westbound 70 at Grand, that vehicle spun out in the right lane, is blocked. Traffic backs up through Salisbury. Northbound 55 between Butler Hill and River DePair, no problems to report. Eastbound 44 between Bulls and 270, look for slow volume there. Eastbound 40 between Timberlake Manor and Mason Road, stop and go traffic. Northbound 270 from Gravoy to Marshall, look for stop and go traffic as well. Westbound 255 from Coke to 55, expect normal traffic. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79, that traffic is finally easing. Eastbound 40 from Spady to Hanley Road, look for slow traffic in pockets. Southbound 55 at Union and Green Park. Construction has the right lanes closed. There are no delays at this hour. Westbound 70 at 94, there's road construction. The left lane is closed. Westbound 40 between Hampton and Mason, look for slow volume there. Westbound 5570 from 4th Street onto the PSB, you still have stop-and-go traffic in your 8:30 commute. Westbound 64 to 5570 merge, look for everything to be flowing freely. And westbound Kingbridge traffic from 5570 onto Laclede's Landing, that is returned back to normal. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge, everything is moving well this hour. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Heritage for the Blind. Don't sell it, don't trade it. Call 1-800-2-DONATE and donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Call 1-800-2-DONATE for hassle-free pickup. That's 1-800-2-DONATE, or you can visit taxdeduction.com for more details. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly cloudy skies today, high around 80 this evening. Mostly clear with a low in the lower 60s. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 80s. Wednesday evening, mostly clear with a low in the mid-60s. And Thursday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the upper 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 69 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting 68 degrees and cloudy conditions as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, your weather, and a final look at traffic in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Congratulations. You found Radio Free St. Louis online at WGNU.net. Remember, we're also at 920 on your AM dial in the St. Louis metropolitan area.
Before you go to the movies, go to Radio Free St. Louis. Find out what's worth seeing and what's not worth the bother. Join Dave Lenahan and Mark Glass for What's Good New at the Movies, a regular feature of Today's Solutions, Friday afternoons at 4:10 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Also online at www.blacktie-stlewis.com.
I have this nightmare about a taco that's been haunting my credit for years. I was exposed to credit cards early in life and thought, hey, free money. Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. And get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Don't wait. Check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-800-4-EQUIFAX now. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. And while you're there, play the Equifax Live Your Dream sweepstakes for a chance to win $1 million. No purchase necessary, void where prohibited, and subject to official rules.
Tuesday morning at 9 on the Wake Up Call, it's our pleasure to bring you author, activist, doctor of economics, and defense analyst Daniel Ellsberg. He was the guy with enough guts to copy the Pentagon report on how decisions were being made in Vietnam and then leak them to the Washington Post and other media because he felt the war was wrong. That report later became known as the Pentagon Papers. Now, his latest book, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, draws some interesting correlations between Vietnam and Iraq, like both being started on a lie. Don't miss author Daniel Ellsberg, Tuesday morning at 9 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 4540400 is my phone number. 4546609 is my fax. And if you want to toll-free long distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Where do we begin? Okay. Let it never be said that there's not a reason, that things don't happen for a reason. A lot of people believe that spiritually things happen for a reason. Such and such and such and such happened. Well, it happened for a reason. There are no accidents. There are no coinkydinks. Things happen for a reason. Why was Tony Blair such a warmonger? Was he just happy to be in the pocket of Boy George? Did he like walking into rooms and being verbally taken to the woodshed by his constituents? Did he enjoy opening up the curtain at Downing Street and seeing hordes of Brits standing there in protest of him? Did he like going sweating onto television talk shows where guests got to just check him for his crazy defense of this occupation of Iraq? Did he like that? Was he cool with that? Was he down with that? Why did he do that? Things happen for a reason. Tony Blair is expected to be hired by, guess who, after he leaves Downing Street? The Carlyle Group. Ain't that some stuff? Things happen for a reason. You know, the Carlyle Group has been nicknamed the ex-president's club. George Bush Sr., James Baker, former British PM John Major. And sources say that Tony Blair is seriously considering a high-profile role with Carlyle, which Carlyle Group manage about $30 billion of investments worldwide. Uh,
that is a job. And I'm not talking about a 9-to-5 job, because that's not how they roll. These people that stepped down from the... I mean, why did he hustle so hard for this war? For the payoff, baby! For the big bucks. Show me the money! Show me the money. He's not going to be working 9-to-5. He's not. There ain't no Dolly Parton in him. He's going to be working a few days a week. I'm sorry, a few days a month. Giving speeches and making networking trips on behalf of the company. How much does that afford him? Many millions of dollars a year. For a few days a month worth of good work if you can get it. All you gotta do is sell your soul. And you'll be rolling with the big dogs. Good work if you can get it. Ain't that some stuff? Carlisle Group. So, there are no coinkydinks. Things happen for a reason. You want to know why he carried so much George W. Bush water? Asked to get a gig with Boy George's daddy. My name is Liz Brown. This is a wake-up call. Get to me. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Hello.
John.
Yes. This might be off your subject, but I'd just like to ask, you were talking about things happening for a reason. And this ties in with your guest from South Africa. The things that are happening in Zimbabwe, on the regular news, you keep hearing that, he's taking land and giving it back to, you know, the original owners. And they're just messing it up. And is that part of this? Thank you.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm not clear, John. Is what part
of
what?
Well, okay, I mean, they say that, you know, that, he's giving land back to the people that owned it, and you know, they're messing it up because, you know, some of them aren't farmers, and
but you
and
know
they
what,
don't
John?
Know what
okay,
to.
And here's the response to that. I mean, the
no, I'm just I'm
okay.
Just
no,
asking
no, no,
you a question.
I know
I'm
you're
not
asking.
Trying to be critical.
Oh no, no, but you are phrasing what critics say
yeah,
about
that's
the,
what
the,
I, why
the
I'm
decision.
Asking because on the regular news, that's what you hear. Well, we see what happens.
Let me articulate a response to that, John. So in case you're ever in a discussion about that, or somebody listening is in a discussion about this, if President Mugabe wanted to take back, or when he takes back the land that was stolen from Zimbabweans,
right?
And if he decides to give all of the land to the driver of his limo,
right?
That's their business. The world didn't bust a grape when racist white folks went in and stole the land in Zimbabwe. So I am not turned, I am not touched, I am not moved by any fake concern about what happens to black Zimbabweans when the same world turned its back and is still supporting white racist thievery of that land. If whatever they decide to do with their land is their business, because the world certainly should take issue with how this government got their land, and about how this government stole the land from the Native Americans and still not paying them back. So we're the last people. Everybody there. What is that phrase from the Bible? First to throw a stone. He is
no,
who without
no.
sin, you know, he ain't
no,
supposed to be throwing any stone. So the world needs to shut up about whatever president, the democratically elected president of Zimbabwe, decides to do with the land for his people and his country.
So that would apply to what your guest was talking about in South Africa. If they get the land back and they, you know, blow it up,
whatever.
It's their business.
It's their business.
Okay.
It's their
Thank
business.
You.
Thanks for your call. My name is Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Don't bring me no fake concern about black folks on the continent, black Africans.
Ain't nobody talking. The people that are talking, oh, what's the poor black people that are in the slums in Zimbabwe are being moved from their houses. You don't care about them black folks. You need to shut up and stay out of business that doesn't concern you. Because it's not true concern that you're talking about. We're going to take a break, folks. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up. Get to me. I'll be back.
Please, 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 please tell me you're going to. Now all your daddy's on your mind.
Friday morning on The Wake-Up Call, reporter Liam Schiff and former researcher Dr. Jonathan Fishbein investigate the AIDS drug experiments done on orphans in New York and Africa. Was it right to use these children as guinea pigs just because their parent, the state, said it was okay? Tune in to find out what's really behind these impenetrable doors of politically guided research. Friday morning at 7 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Washington. One of the military's top generals says the Army is planning for the possibility of staying in Iraq for 4 more years. General Peter Shoemaker says the Army is getting ready for the worst-case scenario of having to keep well over 100,000 troops in Iraq for as long as 4 years. He said force rotation or shortened tours of duty could be part of the plan. Right now, there are about 138,000 troops in the country, and 25,000 of them are Marines. Reserve forces are currently making up 40% of the fighting force there. Shoemaker also says the progress of hammering out a constitution and holding successful elections will play a big part in determining how long the United States will have to stay. And Dateline Tucson. The company that manufactures taser weapons has had 5 lawsuits filed against it just in the past 2 weeks. The suits are rather odd, though, because they have been filed by police officers in 5 states who claim they were seriously injured after they were shocked with the weapons during training classes. One of those filers is Pete Herring, police chief of Hallsville, Missouri. He says he suffered painful, permanent, and progressive hearing and vision loss, as well as neurological damage. And he also says he suffered damage to his heart and 2 strokes. He had volunteered to be shocked while he was hooked up to a cardiac monitor in order to show the humane nature of the stun gun during a training exercise. The suits say Taser International has falsely misled police agencies about the potential for injuries and has also covered up reports of injuries to numerous law enforcement agencies. Taser has sold the stun gun to some 7,000 police agencies and claims over 100,000 policemen have been shocked with it during training and no one ever suffered a serious injury. The company says it's going to fight all of the lawsuits. And by the way, the police chief who was injured was not a wimpy milquetoast either. He was nearly 7 feet tall and weighed 300 pounds. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update.
Do they play jazz in heaven? In New Orleans, we know they do.
If your family hasn't been to New Orleans, y'all haven't lived. Visit NewOrleansOnline.com to plan your trip to Six Flags New Orleans, Audubon Zoo, Aquarium of the Americas, and more. Hop on the new Canal streetcar line, see gators up close, and roll in a riverboat down the mighty Mississippi. Visit NewOrleansOnline.com today for great hotel rates and a free Good Times guide with more than $2,400 in coupons. And jazz up your family's next vacation in New Orleans.
You know if there's a paradise, it's an afternoon in Jackson Square. If they play jazz in heaven, darling, it's standing room only up there.
NewOrleansOnline.com, happening every day.
Tuesday morning at 9 on the Wake Up Call, it's our pleasure to bring you author, activist, doctor of economics, and defense analyst Daniel Ellsberg. He was the guy with enough guts to copy the Pentagon report on how decisions were being made in Vietnam and then leak them to the Washington Post and other media because he felt the war was wrong. That report later became known as the Pentagon Papers. Now, his latest book, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, draws some interesting correlations between Vietnam and Iraq, like both being started on a lie. Don't miss author Daniel Ellsberg, Tuesday morning at 9 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I'm Liz Brown. This is, the Wake Up Call. 454-0400 is my phone number. 1-877-920-WGNU. Get up, get up, get up. Get to me. We have much to talk about. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
Good morning.
Back to Tony Blair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long ago it was late at night. I was watching on CNN where he has to answer questions in the House of Commons. And one of the gentlemen there asked him, what England was going to get from going to war there, or what had he been promised? And he never answered. He talked all around the question. And at the time, I remember thinking, yeah, that's a doggone good question, but he never did answer it.
Well, now you know the answer.
And the people in the House of Commons wanted to know why they should be doing that and what England was promised or what he personally was promised.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, the question interested me, but you know, you never hear any more about it. And I have to thank you again for some good reporting on the big station this morning. They're talking about the, what's these shows, the reality shows?
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't that something to talk about with all the dying and killing? We just had a bunch of children killed over there. I mean, your show is reality. The shows, the TV shows, they're talking about reality. I mean, it's a joke that people have got their minds wrapped up in that stuff and not the problems that we have.
Well, that's why
I enjoy listening to you, because you do question and attack the problems we have.
Thank you so much.
You don't put all that fluffy stuff in there.
All right. Thanks for
Thank you for some good reporting.
You're welcome. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Yes, Liz. The Carlyle Group financed, into a large part by the Saudi royal family, let us never forget, 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudi, and there's a report that just this year alone, 15,000 Saudis have crossed the border into the Iraq war. And one more shocking thing, I was told yesterday that Governor Blunt has installed an electrified fence around the governor's mansion, and he has installed numerous panic emergency buttons on every floor and room of the mansion, too. You know, I hate to say this, Liz, but the last time I read of electrified wire was around the Nazi death camps. It's very chilling, but then we're in a terrible time. Thank you very much, Liz.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Well, I guess, you know, I think you need to be fair. I think that you really need to look on both sides and all sides of issues. I think that if you only look at things in terms of the bad news component of it, you're destined to really be unhappy all the time. And I think, yes, it's bad news that Matt Blunt is spending millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars or tens of thousands of dollars in wiring a fence, an electric fence around his our mansion. But I think the good news side of it, at least, I guess, it's not an electric fence that electrocutes people, because they do have those. The last governor, what was Governor Blackface? Governor Carnahan. He spent money to electrify prisons and spend $1 million to provide electric fences that kill people around prisons. So, you know, good news, bad news. And again, you have to be fair to people. I'm certain that Matt Blunt has all these panic buttons all over the mansions, because we can't forget how young he is, and it must be scary to be in a big old place like that, you know, by yourself. So, you know, he probably uses our state troopers to open closets and check for boogeymen too, because, you know, that's just a product of youth, you know. I got past that when I got a little bit older, so, you know, hopefully our man-child governor will grow out of being scared of the boogeyman in the closet. Or could it be that, like a lot of people who do wrong, maybe he thinks that because he's done so much wrong, people should really, really, really be mad at him. That's what happens when you have a man-child governor. We spend state money using state troopers to check closets for the boogeymen and putting nightlights all over the mansion. Get used to it, folks. That's what happens when kids are in charge. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
All right, how you doing, Liz?
I'm outstanding, Kevin. How are you?
Great. Your African caller, that was wonderful.
Caller? He was in the studio with me.
Oh, huh? Excuse me. I'm a caller. I had such a good time. I forgot where I'm at. But I'm also a socialist. And I've been connecting with them for years. And I remember when Nelson Mandela... It was a miners' union in South Africa that's they're part of the Socialist Party, actually. And when Nelson Mandela was freed, they had this big ruckus if you were in that type of community, that socialist democratic society, that's, you know. And they said that Nelson had sold out because they set him free. And they said that they was going to allow the capitalists...
It's worse for black South Africans than it was before apartheid.
And that's the... Absolutely. And that whole thing goes back to Winnie. See, Winnie Mandela wanted to kick him out.
Didn't play.
Huh?
Didn't play. Winnie don't play.
Everybody was getting mad at Winnie. Mm-hmm. Winnie is the true soldier. Have a good day.
Thanks for your call. I'm Liz Brown. You don't want to miss the next hour. Daniel Ellsberg will be joining us, talking about his book, Secrets, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers. We're going to talk about a little bit about Valerie Plame. We're going to be talking a lot about Iraq. We haven't created anything new. This is familiar, what's happening in Iraq, and it's predictable. Stay with me, folks. I'll be back in my next hour for an hour with author, activist, fearless man, Daniel Ellsberg.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
In all states except Oregon. The study covering 2002 through 2004 was assembled by the advocacy group Trust for America's Health. ABC's Vic Ratner takes a look.
Is it the food? Is it the culture? A new report shows 7 of the 10 states with the highest percentage of adults who are obese are in the South, with Mississippi the heaviest state in the country. The Trust for America's Health says the obesity problem continues to get worse and government policies have been too limited to have a significant impact.
Alabamans gained the most weight last year. Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta is in Atlanta announcing new fuel economy standards.
Nearly all manufacturers will be required to produce more fuel-efficient light trucks and will have to improve the fuel economy of the vehicles in all size categories.
The new standards would have to be completed by the year 2011. The Pentagon has reopened the investigation into the friendly fire combat death of former football star Pat Tillman last year in Afghanistan. The Army initially said Tillman had been killed in action. 6 weeks later, the Army admitted to the family that he'd been killed by members of his own Ranger detachment. One of the last protesters to leave the West Bank settlement of Sa'nour. Israeli police say the evictions are now complete in Sa'nour as well as Homesh. President and Mrs. Bush are enjoying a day off in Donnelly, Idaho.
All President Bush is likely to hear today is the wind in his ears as he pounds a mountain bike trail. He's at a brand new resort in Donnelly, Idaho, population 138. Even smaller than Crawford, Texas.
ABC's Ann Compton traveling with the president. This is ABC News.
Millions of miles, thousands of TV appearances, hundreds of baseball games, 80 years of history, and a fleet of Goodyear blimps all add up to one big celebration. The Goodyear Blimp Birthday Celebration with sky-high savings on some of Goodyear's most popular tires. Plus, get up to an $80 rebate on a qualifying purchase. Offers end August 27th. Call 1-800-GOODYEAR for complete details and the participating retailer nearest you. Goodyear. For 80 years, it's been the name everyone looks up to. Mail-in rebate offer subject to credit approval. Restrictions apply.
All right, what do we have?
Male patient trying to get a loan for a car.
They're checking his credit now.
What's the status?
Looks like he's got some credit problems.
I've seen this before. What's his credit score?
He doesn't know, doctor.
What? He went for a loan without knowing his credit score?
We're losing the loan!
All right, I'm going to call it.
How's your financial health? With Score Power from Equifax, you get your credit report and credit score. It's the first step to healthy credit.
Doctor, there's a woman trying to buy a house without her credit score.
It's an epidemic.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
The French sports newspaper L'Equipe reports Lance Armstrong used a performance-enhancing drug, EPO, to win his first Tour de France title in 1999.
L'Equipe says six Lance Armstrong urine samples frozen from the 1999 Tour were run through the strict tests administered these days at the French National Anti-Doping Lab, and the paper reports they all came back with positive EPO results. The governing body of world cycling didn't begin using such a test until 2001, 2 years later. EPO builds endurance by boosting the production of oxygen-rich red blood cells. The seven times Tour de France champ has reacted quickly, reiterating on his website that he's never taken performance-enhancing drugs. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
There will be more Boston police officers patrolling Fenway Park for tonight's Rolling Stones concert. A 20-year-old fan fell from the rafters Sunday night, breaking her ankles and her wrist. I'm Clarissa Douglas, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, the final attendance numbers are not in yet, but St. Louis public school officials say the first day of classes was a good one. District leaders say the buildings were clean for the start of school, the classrooms were stocked with supplies, and the staff was ready to teach. Incomplete attendance figures do not appear to differ much from last year's 79.5% first day figure. School officials reported few problems with bus transportation yesterday and say the new global positioning system on some buses appears to be a success. The Missouri Department of Natural Resources is undergoing a reorganization. State officials say the reorganization makes the department more efficient and puts the focus on increasing compliance with environmental laws. The department has consolidated its five regional offices and several other functions into the new Division of Field Services. The Air and Land Protection Division and the Water Protection and Soil Conservation Division have combined to form the Division of Environmental Quality. Missouri lawmakers are considering the possibility of reform in title insurance laws. A state Senate committee that was formed to look into the laws heard testimony on Friday. State Senator Harry Kennedy says one possibility is to set a minimum rate for title insurance while also ensuring that customers will be protected.
The title business is a highly competitive industry, and when times are good, there's enough business going around, but when times kind of slow down, the volume just isn't there. We want to make sure that they stay in business, make a profit, but also are there for protecting any claims that might come in, protecting the consumers.
Some title company officials say the current laws do not do a good enough job of regulating who can be a title agent and how agencies are run. The committee was formed after several title insurance companies closed, including Capital Title in St. Louis. Finally this hour, it's a successful maiden voyage for the 40-year-old virgin. The new comedy starring Steve Carell as a sexless bachelor found $20.6 million in box office business to debut at number one. The new airplane suspense thriller Red Eye was second, pulling in an estimated $16.5 million over the slow box office weekend. Red Eye was followed by last weekend's box office champ, the John Singleton crime adventure Four Brothers, with an estimated $13 million in ticket sales this weekend. The Owen Wilson-Vince Vaughn comedy Wedding Crashers maintained its number four standing with $8.3 million, and the Kate Hudson voodoo thriller The Skeleton Key dropped three places from two to five, with an estimated $7.4 million in weekend ticket sales. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, trust those who know your vehicle best. Through September, see your local Toyota dealer to schedule your complimentary tire rotation with the purchase of any regularly priced oil change. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Wartner, the freezing wart remover. Westbound 70 at Grand, a vehicle spun out. Two right lanes are blocked, and traffic backs up to near Salisbury at this hour. Eastbound 70 at the Blanchett Bridge. Look for road construction. Right lanes are closed as the crews are in the final stages of bridge work this hour. There are no delays at this hour. Northbound 55 between Union and 44, no problems reported. Eastbound 44 between 141 and 270, everything's running smoothly. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason, you still have slow traffic. Northbound 270 at 44, that traffic has returned back to normal. Westbound 270 between Lilac and 170, everything is on the move there. Eastbound 40 between McKnight and Hanley, look for slow volume going on. West or southbound 55 between Union and Green Park, there's road construction. Two right lanes are closed this hour. Westbound 70 at 94, there's road construction. The left lane is closed. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley, look for slow volume. Eastbound 70 between Hawks Nest Overpass all the way into 94, look for road construction. The left lane's closed. Westbound 55-70 split at the PSB. Everything is returned back to normal. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the 55-70 split all the way on to Laclede's Landing. Look for no problems to report there in both directions. Tesson Ferry between Lindbergh and Gravoy. Everything is at a standstill due to paving operations. Eastbound 40 at Van Deventer's. That exit is closed through August for construction. You can use Kings Highway Market or Grand to get around that area. In both directions, 44 at Jameson. Look for bridge maintenance operations. So expect some lane closures going on there. That's a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Wartner, the freezing wart remover. Innocent warts? Hardly. Warts spread. Treat them fast. Wartner freezes warts in a single treatment. Outdated treatments take up to 12 weeks. Nothing treats warts faster or more effectively than Wartner. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Partly cloudy skies today, a high around 80. This evening, look for mostly clear skies with lower and lower 60s. Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, a high in the lower 80s. Wednesday evening, mostly clear with a low in the mid-60s. And then on Thursday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the upper 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 69 degrees under mostly clear skies. Lambert Field is reporting 69 and clear skies as well with some clouds. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
The Healthy Family, presented by the Missouri Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse, reminding you to talk with your children about the dangers of underage drinking. Learn more at MissouriPrevention.org.
A new study gives more praise to the so-called Mediterranean diet, especially for those with heart disease who want to live longer. A study based in Greece and the United States found that those who ate like a Greek following their diagnosis of heart disease lived longer than those who followed other diets. The Mediterranean diet is loaded with fish, vegetables, fruit, grains, and nuts, and is low in saturated fats. It includes olive oil, which contains healthy fatty acids as opposed to those found in red meat. The diet also includes moderate amounts of red wine. Recent research has shown that the diet also helps people lower their risk of heart disease, cancer, arthritis, and age-related memory loss. About 1,300 Greek women and men who had all been diagnosed with heart disease were followed for years. Researchers found those adults had a 30% reduced chance of dying if they had adhered to the Mediterranean way of eating. I'm Julie Anderson with The Healthy Family.
Friday morning on The Wake Up Call, reporter Liam Schiff and former researcher Dr. Jonathan Fishbein investigate the AIDS drug experiments done on orphans in New York and Africa. Was it right to use these children as guinea pigs just because their parent, the state, said it was okay? Tune in to find out what's really behind these impenetrable doors of politically guided research. Friday morning at 7 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back, welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. We are experiencing some technical difficulties. We are still working on our guest, Daniel Ellsberg. Hopefully we will have him in a few minutes. If not, we will reschedule him. I apologize for that. But that is not to say that there aren't plenty of issues for us to be talking about out here. The reason why I was so excited about Daniel Ellsberg's interview is because of the connections between what happened in Vietnam the enormous, the enthusiastic, the relentless lies that were told in Vietnam in order to justify our presence in Vietnam. Same lies that are being told to justify our presence in Iraq. It's so similar that it is frightening. 454-0400 is my phone number. My name is Liz Brown. This is the wake-up call. We have much, much, much to talk about. Stay with me. Car phone.
Liz, how you doing?
I'm outstanding.
Liz, I just heard a report on the news where he said Pat Robertson is calling for the assassination of Hugo Chavez.
You know I already talked about that this morning. You know that I've already talked about that it's huge, because if another religious leader in any other country called for something as the assassination of a democratically elected head of a state, the world would condemn that. I'm waiting for the White House to condemn this. I'm waiting for other religious people to condemn this. Not only to condemn this, but to drum him out of business.
Well, I was just going to say, he should be taken out the airway.
Yes, he should. Because
that's exciting, all type of riotous type of behavior.
No. Please don't reduce it to riotous behavior. That's a terroristic act. To call for the assassination of and to enthusiastically support the assassination of a democratically elected leader of a country. That's a terroristic act. You know, we lost DJs off the air because they were talking about the ways that people respond in certain circumstances. Two people lost their jobs on the radio.
Well, I want to see who's going to call for a boycott of any type of advertising that's going over the 700. But I don't know how he makes his money. But if it's through advertising or anything like that, anybody who's advertising that on that program needs to pull their ass.
He said to kill. A preacher said we should kill somebody whose politics are not in line with ours.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't that some stuff? Ain't that some? And George, poor boy George. Poor, you know, I'm starting to feel for him now. Here he is trying to get on his 5.5 week vacation after his vacation in April. All he wants is some downtime while the world is falling apart. He just wants a little chill time, right? He's now gone to a city that only has 125 people in it to ride his bike because he can't ride his bike in Crawford. He needs to be on the horn right now condemning what Pat Robertson said.
Most definitely. Let me just say this in closing, Liz. In the 70s when we had this gas crisis where Jimmy Carter was blamed for everything under the sun, and we were paying almost $3 a gallon for gas, and you know, the news agencies doesn't let Jack the Bush at all. I'm trying to figure out why.
Bump the news agencies. Bump the news agencies. Where are the Democrats? Where are the United States senators that want to, that say that they don't want Roberts to be a Supreme Court justice? Why aren't they piling on Boy George? Why aren't they doing that? They're the ones that make the news. There should be a vigil outside of a gas station every day of every week saying, this is George Bush's fault. This is George Bush's fault. It's $3 a gallon. It's George Bush's fault.
This is a conspiracy going on, Liz, and it's, you know, they're getting together, and they're basically just going to let things continue the way they are. And if you're a right-wing radical, you can call for assassinations of heads of government, and you can pay $6 a gallon for gas, and everything is fine.
Thanks for your call. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. This morning we are going to be talking to Daniel Ellsberg. He is the author of Secrets, a memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers. There's a reason why we're going to be talking to Daniel Ellsberg this morning. There's a reason why. Because the more things change, the more things stay the same. And these are critical times for our country, critical times for us, critical times for the world. And make no mistake about it. The stuff that is happening now is some stuff that was happening in Vietnam. We need to talk about this. We need to talk about the connections between where we are today and where we came from. Because, as I said in my last hour, there are no coincidences. Things happen for a reason. My guest this morning to talk to us as George Bush peddles his way, and now no longer in Crawford, but seeking refuge in the state of Idaho, in a city with 125 people in it. He's peddling away his problems. We need to address some of ours here. And now I have to help facilitate that conversation about where we are today and why the President of the United States shouldn't be riding his bike for 5 weeks. To facilitate that conversation, I have joining me from Berkeley, California, Daniel Ellsberg. Daniel Ellsberg, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm sorry. I'm a little late on the program. Hope we have some time left.
Oh, we certainly do. We certainly do. I was taking a look at your book, Secrets, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, and I was struck as I was reading through it about reading your transformation and your journey through life and where it has taken you. But I was more struck by the fact that what we're experiencing today with Iraq is not new. What has gotten us there and what keeps us there is not new.
That's right. It is remarkably a replaying, when you say, a journey through life. It seems as though it's brought us back where we were in a place or a stretch of road that I hope we never travel again. It was very clear 2 years ago that 3 years ago, my gosh, that we were being lied into war the same way we were lied into Vietnam. I didn't foresee that fall of 2002 that it would be the same kind of war. The geography looked different, but it has turned out to be very much the same kind of war. The initial Blitzkrieg this time had no counterpart in Vietnam. But what it settled down to is a war that's just remarkably similar, a war of ambushes. There's differences. The ambushes are in the cities rather than in the countryside. And there's other differences. As I say, it's a dry heat in Iraq. And the language our troops don't speak, can't communicate at all with, is Arabic rather than Vietnamese. But otherwise, we're in the same situation, being confronted by people who don't want to be occupied by a foreign power, and they're not going to give the occupiers any information as to where the ambushes are.
Well, back in 61, you looked at the data, you looked at the information about Vietnam, and you write in your book, I read somewhere that you don't have to be an ichthyologist to know when a fish stinks.
That's right.
that it wasn't going to work in Vietnam. Talk to us about how you came to that knowledge back in 61.
Well, pretty much that was very quickly. You're talking about a trip that I made as early as 1961. I was just 1 week in Vietnam, but I spent that week reading very late into the night reports about what had been happening in Vietnam. Remember, that's 4 years before we sent combat troops over, and we had advisors there, and they had been fighting foreigners there since 1945 at that point. Now, these were French, and we were paying most of the costs of that war for the French, so it really was our war, but but the Americans didn't know that. And we thought when we went in 54, well, we're a whole new game here. This is a new war. You people have never seen anything like us with our helicopters and our air power and whatnot. We're not the French. But the truth is that we're a lot stronger than that now, tremendously. The world has never seen anything like the American fighting forces there now in the way of their equipment and their smart bombs and their lasers and everything else. But the fact is that a determined people who are prepared to die in very large numbers compared to the invader can not beat that invader in the sense of throwing him off the beaches, but they can stalemate even the most powerful empire in the world. You know, we more or less invented that in this country. We discovered that when we were fighting the world's mightiest empire in 1776 and 1777 and on. The fact is that people fighting from their own farmland, their own countryside, their own tree lines, can stalemate a far more highly equipped invading force.
But also
thousands of miles away.
But don't you also have to add into that a determination? I mean, there's a determination of the Vietnamese people. Yep. This is their land. The determination of the Iraqi people. This is their stuff.
Exactly. Well, it takes and the militia, you know, our Minutemen. It takes a couple of things. They really have to be willing to you. The casualties that the people protecting their own land take against these people who are much more highly equipped with better weapons, the casualties you take are terrible. In Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh predicted to the French as early as 1946, just before the war was really beginning. And he said, if it comes to a fight, we will fight. You will kill 10 of ours, and we will kill one of yours. And in the end, it is you that will tire. And that's the way it went for the next almost 30 years. We did kill at the ratio of about 10 to 1. We thought, well, they can't keep this up. But if they were willing to keep it up, which they were willing longer than the people who were fighting thousands of miles from their homes. And their families and their taxpayers came to the point when they said, we don't need this province that much. We'll live without it. And they went home. We'll go home eventually in Iraq, but I'm afraid it will be much longer than Vietnam, or as long at least. You know, the Vietnam War, when you consider the French part, which we were financing, and then our part, lasted 30 years. Mm-hmm. And we could be 30 years in Iraq because Iraq has something that Vietnam didn't. We have oil in Iraq and bases in a strategic location, and the reason it's so strategic is because it's surrounded by oil. And I don't think we're going to leave that very soon, Democrats or Republicans. That's a grim prospect. I'm certainly doing what I can, and thousands or millions of people want us out of there from this country. And yet, I have to say the odds don't favor our getting our government to take that course, even though it's just more clearly an aggressive war than was true even in Vietnam. And despite that, and despite the fact that we're totally isolated from the rest of the world on this, I'm afraid that the odds are that one administration after another is going to decide to stay that course as long as the oil lasts, and the oil will be there a long time.
Is this war different from the perspective of the temperament or the mindset of our soldiers going into it? Are the soldiers that are going into this occupation in Iraq different than the soldiers that went into Vietnam? And will that have an impact on how long this war lasts?
Well, first, I would say no. The soldiers in both cases fought really very well. And they're trained. They do their job. I think you're pointing to the fact, of course, that these are volunteers, they're more highly educated, and they're fighting with more elaborate equipment on the whole, although we have the irony.
And there's more of a public questioning going into this war, I think, than there was with the Vietnam.
Yes, it's coming much earlier for a couple of reasons, despite the fact that the casualties are still lower than they were at, say, this stage in the war, of the Vietnam War. And the first reason is that the reasons for going into the war, which were very clear-cut, to find WMDs, to find chemical and biological, maybe even nuclear weapons there, that was exploded in the face of the president amazingly early, right away. You just couldn't find them. It took him months and months to decide what the rest of the world could see, that there wasn't anything there. But by eventually, it became clear that the reasons for going in had just been illusory. And then the word began getting out earlier than last time that there had been questioning inside, that people knew that the evidence they were pointing to was very flimsy and questionable about the WMDs, and that the costs were going to be very great, and that they weren't sending enough troops and so forth. The president was lying just as much under Johnson, the president I serve. And I knew that virtually, as you've read in my book, virtually
from the get-go.
The first day I was in, I knew that the president was lying in, and I kept my mouth shut to the Congress just like everybody else and the public, and I went along with that. But the lies didn't become clear for years, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, I put the Pentagon Papers out in 71. That's 6 years, or 7 years, 7 years after those lies that I encountered my first day in the Pentagon. And these Pentagon Papers documented the fact that they had been lying at that point. Well, in this case, we have had a good many leaks come out, memoirs right during the war, like Richard Clark's memoir, and Against All Enemies, and O'Neill's book about his first day in the cabinet when they're talking about going into Iraq right now, right away. So we did learn the lies quicker, but.
And we have to hold.
I would say there is more disillusionment faster than there was in Vietnam.
And we have to hold that thought, Daniel. We're going to take a break. I'm Liz Brown. I'm talking to author, activist Daniel Ellsberg. He's joining us from Berkeley, California. He is the author of numerous books, but the one that we're talking about today, Secrets, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, Daniel Ellsberg. We'll be back. Stay with us.
You're listening to Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU Radio, 920 on your AM dial and at WGNU.net.
To me, summer is family time, a time to spend with the kids doing stuff we all love to do, which is why we go to Worlds of Fun. That and the fact that they have lots of coasters. Mamba, Timberwolf, Spinning Dragons, Boomerang. I like to ride them all. Of course, World of Fun has stuff for the kids, too. Mine loved the new Peanuts Playhouse at Camp Snoopy. They played and played, took a little break, and then played and played some more. Then, if we need to cool off, we go to Oceans of Fun, where we ride the water slides, Typhoon and Diamond Head, and then the tube ride, Caribbean Cooler, Aruba Tuba, and Hurricane Falls. And finally, the wave pool. Another great thing is we can stay the night at the new Worlds of Fun Village Resort. Talk about easy.
Worlds of Fun and Oceans of Fun. Do one park or do both with the ride and slide ticket.
It's so cool.
Open daily. Make reservations for the new Worlds of Fun Village Resort or book your Joe Cool's Backyard Barbecue at worldsoffun.com.
Hello, I'm Lucille Mitchell from the Bible Dancer Crusade broadcast. Every Sunday morning at 9, the Seventh-day Adventist churches in the St. Louis area present a unique ministry that couples teaching and the Word of God to insights that will help you with everyday living. We deal with the areas concerning health, family, prophecy, and the gospel. And I think you will find every program is full of information you can use in your own life. Please listen to the Bible Answer Crusade broadcast every Sunday morning at 9, right here on Radio 920 WGNU.
It'll be fun. It'll be cool. It'll be sports talk with Kevin Paulus, as close as your computer, at WGNU.net.
Friday morning on The Wake-Up Call, reporter Liam Schiff and former researcher Dr. Jonathan Fishbein investigate the AIDS drug experiments done on orphans in New York and Africa. Was it right to use these children as guinea pigs just because their parent, the state, said it was okay? Tune in to find out what's really behind these impenetrable doors of politically guided research. Friday morning at 7 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
We
rise up, rise up, everybody gotta rise up, come follow me, rise up, rise up, it's you myself got to rise up, you got to rise up, rise up, everybody gotta rise up, yeah, you gotta rise up, rise up.
Oh, rise up, rise up. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up and get to me. Don't forget we broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Also, you can check out the archives of the Wake Up Call at whiterosesociety.org. If you missed an hour, go get an hour at whiterosesociety.org. Our guest this morning is author, activist Daniel Ellsberg. He's joining us from Berkeley, California. Mr. Ellsberg, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
One of my favorite chapters in your book, Secrets, A Memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, is the chapter on war resistors. I love this chapter. I love where you talk about, if you don't mind, I'd like to read from your book. My heroes had changed color and sex. You talked about your evolution as to becoming a war resistor. Can you talk to us about how that happened?
Well, you're referring to the fact that when I was in the Marines, I was recruited in by John Wayne, like I'd say about half the Marine Corps, from Sands of Iwo Jima, a film. I don't know if the new ones see that one as much as I did, but I still remember that. So we're all there in there because of John Wayne as Sergeant Stryker, and I think I say in the book, I had the chance to see him once when I was with the 6th Fleet in the Mediterranean. At a restaurant, I sent over a bottle of wine to his table and got a chance to shake his hand. Later, I discovered that my hero now being Rosa Parks, that's the reference to my heroes having changed color and sex. And I had the chance to meet her when I was on my way to arraignment, as a matter of fact, and to tell her that she was my hero. Just to leap up to the present, there's a woman who's being compared to Rosa Parks right now, and I think very, very aptly. I think Cindy Sheehan, who just decided to follow her impulse this summer and go to Crawford. She was already in Texas for addressing the Veterans for Peace. She suddenly realized she was pretty close to the president's vacation home, and she would just go and ask him as a mother who was very much grieving for her son lost in Iraq combat, and confront him and ask him why her son had died and to tell her what was really the noble cause. And I think, what was it, just a week or so ago, 1,500 vigils around the country.
Right. And Cindy has been on the show several times. It's like there are these world-weary women, you know, that just decide enough is enough. Something has to be done.
Mothers, we all come from mothers, and I must say that I think this sounds very judgmental, but I think that an awful lot of mothers and fathers don't fulfill their role in thinking hard for what is best for their children. They follow the president's lies or the cheering, and they send their children, now it's women, daughters as well as men, they send them off to war very uncritically and very enthusiastically without really asking the question that Cindy is asking now. Is this necessary? Why are they risking their lives? And what is this for? Are there alternatives or not? And how is it going to end? She is a mother who is not asking to be comforted by more lies. Tell me lies, Mr. President, so I can feel better about my son's death. And she's not asking for her son's death to be, quote, honored by sending other mothers, daughters, and sons over to die and supposedly to validate that sacrifice. She's saying, I'm not convinced and this should end. Others should not die. So, in other words, I think she is very much in the spirit of Rosa Parks, and I'll bet that Rosa Parks is watching that and is feeling honored by the comparison, just as Cindy is honored by the comparison.
You talked about the lies of Richard Nixon and the lies of this administration. Mr. Ellsberg, from your perspective, who's worse?
Sorry?
Who's worse, Nixon or Bush?
Oh, an interesting question, because a lot of people are saying that this administration is the most secretive there's ever been and the most deceptive there's ever been. And that's hard for me to accept in my advanced age here of 74. It seems to me that the administrations I served or consulted with, Lyndon Johnson's and Richard Nixon's, are very strong competitors when it comes to lying and keeping secrets. There was one very big difference. This president has the same party. And I won't even say the problem is that he has a Republican, that he's a Republican, and he has a Republican House and Republican Senate and now pretty a Republican court. The problem is that it's the same party. Johnson was just as deserving of impeachment and conviction for war crimes as this president. And that means serving him was in the outer reaches of a good long prosecution process, if it had ever come to that. And the same is true of Nixon. But both of them confronted and Johnson had a Congress of the same party, so he wasn't going to be impeached. He was impeachment proof at that point, just as this president is. But beyond that, there was a difference. The Democratic Congress was more critical of the war than the Republican Congress is, and I don't say the Congress as a whole. Enough people supported Johnson in that war to keep it going. But there was more criticism than you can find in the Republican Party now. Now you have to look for a Walter Jones or a Ron Paul, and Chuck Hagel is admirably pointing out now the comparison with Vietnam, in which he got two Purple Hearts. And he can see that people are getting Purple Hearts over there the same way they got them in Vietnam. He has a very good perception on that. But he's the exception, speaking out among the Republicans. Now, Bush, with this Republican Congress of the same party and a court and the same social philosophy, is just set free. I think that to do pretty much whatever he wants, he doesn't feel any constraint of the Constitution or of laws. And that would, I think, have been pretty true of Nixon and Johnson if they could have gotten away with it.
So it is worse.
Well, it's worse because of the setting, because of the politics of the country, which is, as I say, I think that if Nixon were in office right now, he'd be acting very much like Bush in every respect, Patriot Act and everything else, given the Republican Congress. But he had a liberal Congress, and in that constraint, he had more liberal policies domestically than Bill Clinton did.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Well, talk to us about the resistors, because we talked a little bit about Cindy Sheehan and what she is doing and the vigils that have come out of that. We have to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like for you to put in context the resistors that we have today. Is it the same, or are we doing better, or are we worse off with the type of resistance that we have today? I am talking to author Daniel Ellsberg. He's joining us from Berkeley, California. This is Liz Brown. We will be back after this break. Please stay with us. Oh, baby, just to hear you speak makes me awe you just to see how much your love would be. Be like a queen, a queen upon her throne.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Pittsburgh. The housing market in the United States has reached a peak. Affordable housing is now at a 14-year low, according to a report by the National Association of Realtors. Prices over the next year are expected to rise at only about half the rate of this year. Brokers in some markets report property is staying on the market longer, and the number of unsold homes is on the increase. Home prices went up over 13% in the second quarter of this year, and that was the fastest increase in the last 25 years. The median price of an existing single-family home is now well over $200,000. The Federal Reserve says buyers are now trying creative financing options to try and make houses more affordable to them. Adjustable rate mortgages, interest-only loans, and other types of non-traditional lending devices are among those creative efforts. And at Dateline Chicago, a former employee of Halliburton has pleaded guilty to taking over $100,000 in bribes from an Iraqi company to guarantee reconstruction contracts to it. Glenn Allen Powell could go to prison for up to 20 years. He's also facing a $1.25 million fine for defrauding the federal government. A plea agreement filed in U.S. District Court in Rock Island, Illinois, has Powell admitting to taking a kickback from the unnamed company for a $600,000 contract to renovate a warehouse in Iraq. Another worker for Halliburton's subsidiary, KBR, was also indicted in March in connection with a fraud scheme that netted him over $3 million for a contract to supply fuel tankers for operations in Kuwait. A Halliburton spokesperson says the company does not tolerate such behavior by anyone at any level in any Halliburton company. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Spring rains, summertime heat. They can take a toll on your roof. But not to worry, call Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127. Person Roofing now offers a GAF factory warranty up to 10 years on any modified rubber roof. And that includes labor and material. GAF is the largest maker of roofing material in the country and stands behind its product 100%. Finance your new roof with Visa or MasterCard. Free estimates. Call Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127.
This is the sound of an AK-47 being fired at you. This is the sound of a rocket-propelled grenade headed your way. This is the sound of a bullet ricocheting off your helmet. This is the sound of an anti-personnel landmine exploding underneath you. This is the sound of a car bomb exploding less than a block away. And this?
These people don't lie. George W. Bush would be talking about.
That's the sound of people who have never heard these sounds arguing about something they know absolutely nothing about. Maybe we should start listening to the people who were there. Go to optruth.org to find out how you can really help support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Hey, what's up, Doc?
To find out the answer to that long-standing question, ask the Doc. Dr. Pat, that is. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to noon, call in and talk to Dr. Pat about whatever's on your mind. So if you're wondering, what's up, Doc? Find out for 2 hours every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to noon with Dr. Pat here on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Also online at WGNU.net.
We're waiting for your calls at WGNU. From the local calling area, just dial 314-454-0400. If you're calling long distance, the toll-free number is 1-877-920-WGNU. If you are calling long distance from a car phone or want to use a particular name on the air, please let us know when you call. Get into Talk Radio with a Difference. That's Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
Friday morning on the wake-up call, reporter Liam Schiff and former researcher Dr. Jonathan Fishbein investigate the AIDS drug experiments done on orphans in New York and Africa. Was it right to use these children as guinea pigs just because their parent, the state, said it was okay? Tune in to find out what's really behind these impenetrable doors of politically guided research. Friday morning at 7 on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Hello, morning. This is Liz Brown. I am back. This is the Wake-Up Call. We are talking to author, activist, writer, Daniel Ellsberg. He's the author of Secrets, a memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers. Mr. Ellsberg, welcome back.
I'm really enjoying the program.
Thank you. Talk to us about what's different with resistors now. Is it different than Vietnam?
Well, of course, a major difference in the war is the lack of a draft now.
Sure.
People felt that difference had made was that people were just trying to get out of serving. The fact is that of course, at least half of the resistance, if not more, was at that time was women who were not subject to the draft at that point and who felt the same way their brothers and cousins did and friends did about the war and were resisting it. But that, of course, swelled the ranks, but it also gave the occasion for draft resistance. The resistance took the form of being willing to violate the draft restrictions and to go to prison. 50,000 people were in the legal process because of their resistance to the draft, and 5,000 actually went to prison for some period, usually for several years. Very, very impressed. We owe them a lot, I think, for their patriotism, their conscience, their willingness to do that in order to send the rest of us as strong a message as they could that the war was wrong. I was one of those who heard that message. You asked earlier what changed me, mm-hmm. and it was a process of reading and knowing about the war, above all, and knowing that the war was going on. But what changed, and being over there for 2 years and seeing the war myself, but what led me to take an action that was likely to put myself in prison for 115 years, which is the charges I was facing, was meeting several young men, actually, but one in particular who was on his way to prison for telling the draft board that he wasn't going to inform them anymore of his changes of address, as the rules required. He wasn't cooperating anymore. And they had his address changed his address to Latuna Prison. And I visited him, actually, during that year when I was copying the Pentagon Papers. But his example and many others put the question in my mind, what can I do to help end the war if I'm willing to go to jail for it? And that's the question that really freed me to think of doing something that would do just that, which was copying these top-secret documents and informing the public of the real reasons behind the war and the lack of good reasons behind the war.
I didn't live during those times. I can only know what I read about, and it feels like living in these times that there doesn't seem to be the same type of fearlessness as there was back during the Pentagon Papers, during the Vietnam War. Does it seem that way to you?
Well, not really. I think I know what you mean. In terms of demonstrations, at this stage of the war, well, we're now, it's not so more than 2 years into it, 2.5 years in. But the demonstrations earlier on, even before the war, remember, which much, much larger, incomparably larger than before or the very early stages of the Vietnam War, and especially internationally, you had millions and millions of people demonstrating in February of 2003. There was nothing like that before any war in history, I would say. And I would say the demonstrations here before and in the earliest stages of the war were probably larger than have ever occurred anywhere. Now, you didn't have, of course, the draft resistance because we don't have the draft. You don't have that immediately. And by the way, I think that a draft is in our future. I think that the next 9/11, which I hate to say, is going to happen, I think, especially if it's on the same scale or larger than before. The next 9/11 is going to lead to police measures in this country that we've never seen before. We're not remotely done. And it'll also, I think, see the president doing things in what amounts to a police state, that what he wants to do, that he can't do this month. And one of those things is a draft, which will enable him to put several hundred thousand people in Iraq and perhaps a comparable number in Iran or eastern Saudi Arabia. So I think I have to say, I'm being not hopeful here. I think a draft is in our future.
Well, you say
then you'll see bigger demonstrations, but you'll also see a bigger war.
And you'll also see a different police state in response to
those
demonstrations.
I don't think the demonstrations will stop the war. But going back now to the determination of people, you know, something that's easy to miss, you think of it just as a change in generations, but there's a different historical context. The war in 65, as I say, we'd been there since, in some form or other, since 46, really, but people weren't really aware of that. We began putting a lot of troops over there in 65. Well, that happened coming right out of the civil rights movements earlier, going back in from the late 50s, and, of course, Rosa Parks, mid-50s. But you had years then of civil rights agitation and activism and peace marches, freedom rides going down into the South and so forth. And so you had a generation of young activists who were ready to organize and sacrifice and work together on the war. And then the women's movement came out of that, and gay liberation, other things. The organization that was there was ready to turn itself to the war. In this case, you didn't have that. You had, you know, the 80s and the 90s here with relatively little activism. So you've got a young generation and an older generation that isn't
that's disconnected,
so used to it.
That's really kind of disconnected from it.
And they don't. The country at large is acting in a kind of strange way, as far as I can see. First, you have the Democratic Party is all right in the minority.
And we have 3 minutes, Mr.
Okay,
Wilson.
There isn't that much they can do in the way of investigations.
But they could holler more than what they're hollering.
Sure, can do a lot more. It didn't have to be just one congressperson, one black woman in Oakland, Barbara Lee, who is a tremendous, marvelous leader,
she's
and I
wonderful.
I pay her tribute on every possible occasion. She was the one member of Congress who voted against delegating their power right after 9/11, delegating their power to this president to use as he saw fit, another Tonkin Gulf resolution. Now, the next year, she, Barbara Lee, and Dennis Kucinich and others had rustled up another 100 or so congresspeople to vote against the next Tonkin Gulf resolution going into Iraq. But on the whole, the passivity of the Democrats in Congress is appalling to me. And we're certainly not putting the pressure on them. By the way, to come right up to the present, there's one senator now, Russ Feingold, who was the one senator who voted against the Patriot Act. Incredible. But just this week, he is the first senator to come break ranks and say, we need a deadline there. He proposes that all American troops should be out of Iraq by December 31st, 2006. That's next year. No one can say truthfully that that's precipitate or immediate or cutting and running. What he's saying is walk, don't run, to the exit, that where we should be is out of there, not going in more. And the Democratic leadership in Congress, by the way, Hillary Clinton, Kerry, Biden, they're all talking about sending more troops.
And that's something.
Which is appalling.
Should George W. Bush be impeached?
Certainly. Of course. But is he going to be impeached by this Congress? No. But if we can change that by 2006 and get a Democratic House, then cowardly and passive as these Democrats have been so far, I would hope he gets some fresh Democrats in there, then he will be impeached and he deserves to be impeached.
Daniel Ellsberg, author of Secrets, a memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call.
Thank you. Very good program.
Take care. Listen, folks, Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call. I'll be back tomorrow with more good stuff. Until then, stay strong.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Clarissa Douglas.
It won't do anything to help American motorists now, but Uncle Sam is requiring tougher fuel economy standards for large trucks and SUVs in the years ahead. Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta made the announcement this morning in Atlanta.
This is a plan that will save gas and result in less pain at the